Hello and welcome to the Adeptus Terra podcast, episode 43. I'm Matt.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Neil.
And here we are to talk about
Megazords.
Titans.
Megazords.
Yes. That's not what my notes say. It says we're talking about Tau.
Nope, not
you're,
true.
You're on the wrong
one. Nope. We did that once. So we are covering Titans. We're starting our second ever mini-series. And this one should be mini.
It's it like will be
over
mini.
three episodes, I believe. This episode we're talking about the Imperial Titans of the Grim Darkness.
The Grim Dark.
And we're... Oh, I'm definitely... My voice is definitely going before the end of this recording.
Matthew is not well again.
Apparently so. I felt fine until about an hour before. Honestly. Anyway, we are going to be covering Heart of Rage. So we've been telling you guys, I think last episode we mentioned it and Sam helpfully posted up yesterday or today. Was it this morning?
No, it was yesterday. I was on the train home.
Yes.
In interesting fashion.
I was very interested to know that it was legible, to be honest. And I, until you just mentioned it, completely forgot that I even posted that.
Yes.
Re-listening before tomorrow's recorded Heart of Rage.
Recorded.
No, recording, it's fine.
Oh, it does say recorded.
Yeah, no. Nice. Autocorrect kicked in. It must have.
Good.
It's probably a good thing autocorrected in.
Yeah.
Corrected in.
Yeah.
Kicked in. Oh, dear, it's going to be. It's been one of those days for me already.
Oh, okay. Yes. Fair enough. So we're covering Titans in our spotlight. The Heart of Rage short story and mission to accompany it, which will be really interesting, diving into narrative gaming.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I think it went well so far.
It's good that we've all played... there we go, that's better. It's good that we've all played the mission. I think that was good to develop it a bit. So
yes.
I'm quite psyched to do that segment.
Yeah, it's going to be good. So look forward to that towards the end of the episode. Few things to mention. Reminder to everyone for the Warp Storm changes. So we have no Warp Storm segment this episode. We're still storing up your pain and joys, your Warp Storm questions, and we have our opinion poll going. Well, kind of failed opinion poll because Facebook pages suck.
Yes.
So you can't post a poll that has more than two options on a page. And this has pushed us to act.
And contribute to Facebook more.
Okay. I have no idea where you were going with that sentence.
Oh, okay.
Fine. It just seemed like a strange one. Anyway, so we are announcing our new Facebook group. We're starting a new Facebook group to interact with you guys better, to give you a space to... share the things that you are doing, hobby related, ask questions, answer decent polls with decent options, and just to integrate what we do online with each other. So that's open for all people. You just ask to join and we'll set up maybe a question so we don't get bots and things. And yeah.
And I think it's really important to, because I know originally and we agreed not to do a group, because there were so many good groups out there. And I think it's just mainly the listenership and the hangouts that we've been doing that has kind of spurred on the actually... It'd be really cool, because when people post to the page, we only see it, and it's very difficult for other people to see that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think this will enable... We'll continue to feed that, so we can see the likes of Paul's buddy Shaw's... Facebook updates of the models he's working on. We can see Necromunda Tom's stuff that he's doing, and it'd be really cool to kind of share all that out across our listeners, and it'd be really cool to get you all into one group together, and I can then leave every other group so that I can just get all my source of truth from
in
that
one place. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's going to be called the Adeptus Terra Podcast Community Safe Room.
Indeed.
And I've written a little blurb about how this is a safe space.
Oh, good.
Because there's lots of slightly questionable 30 and 40K groups out there. And we're just, we've got one rule. don't be a div.
It is indeed.
If we as administrators believe you're being a div, we'll either ask you or forcibly remove you from the group.
Indeed.
So
it will be a protected space.
Protected space.
Yes.
So
Where you guys can engage with each other and engage with us.
Yeah.
The page will still run. We'll still post up new episode notifications and the hangout groups through the page, more kind of formal stuff. And the group will be the day-to-day chat between you guys, each other, and us.
So, I think it will also mean we can post this ourselves.
Yes.
So when we have those really awkward conversations where all three of us are talking at the same time.
All under the banner of the podcast.
All under the banner page. And then people are like, who are we talking to? Yeah. So it'd be cool. I'm really looking forward to it. So we're going to launch the competition.
Indeed, yes. I'm literally holding the book and you've just reminded me that we were going to do that. So to celebrate, I guess, the new Facebook group, we are going to finally be giving away the Horus Heresy Model Masterclass, Volume 1 book by Forge World. Well, Games Workshop, Forge World is a Forge World book, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, there's the logo. I see it. We've had this book for a while. It was given to us by a listener. I believe Mr.
Matt
Pottar.
Yes.
We've had it for a long time and we've been meaning to give it away, trying to think of a good way of doing it. This seems to be the best way. We're creating a group where people can share their hobby, share what they're working on, new techniques they're trying, ask questions about all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to give away a book that helps you hobby. The way you do that is just join the group. And within 2 months, I believe, not next episode, but the episode after that, which will be our June episode.
Yep.
Yes.
Good. Yep. Yes, indeed.
I can do months. Good. we will select a winner at random from the group people. That's not us three, obviously.
Well, now that I'm not writing as the Adeptus Terra podcast, I feel like I should be able to...
You've had access to this book for like a year and a half, so...
I do not... I want to win it. No, so it's fine. So, yeah, so we'll pick a winner out of the group, and I hope that Matt joins the group and we can send it back to him.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. That would be amazing. Oh, that'd be so funny. Anyway, what haven't we mentioned yet?
We haven't mentioned the next hangout date for April.
Let's do it.
Which, at the moment, the hobby hangout date for April is going to be the 29th. Did I say the 29th or did I say the 28th?
I don't know what that
is. I've written 29th in because that's what you said to me.
I have a funny feeling that wasn't right when I think about it now. Let us consult the calendar. The calendar says that it is, yes, April the 29th. Now, at the moment, it's me hosting, but it may not be, depending on if I have internet.
Yes, indeed.
If it's not me, then it'll be Sam.
Most probably. April's quite crazy for me, so that would be good.
April is equally...
And I'm hosting the March one that's happening next weekend.
You are hosting the March one. April is definitely going to happen. It will be one of us.
Yeah.
That day, I'm coming back from Lee Valley Water Sports Centre.
Oh, really?
And trying not to die.
Stay away from rope.
Yeah, if it doesn't happen, then the reason why is because I'm dead.
Awesome.
And these guys are going to be in mourning.
So, anyway, with all of that out of the way, sorry for so much housekeeping at the beginning of the episode. We're going to go to our News from Terra segment after this quick break, because we've been waffling for far too long. And hopefully it's less of a train wreck.
Hi, it's Deathwatch Tom. I just want to tell you all about the Frayed Paintbrush Hobby Progress Facebook group. It's a positive group set to motivate us to hobby and then share amongst all the other members. At the beginning of the month, post your monthly challenge on the page, and at the end of the month, you can post your completed work for all to see. No pressure, just fun amongst friends. Hope to see you there.
And welcome back. As you'll notice, that I am not Matthew Rose. I'm indeed Sam. We are giving Matt's voice a little break because we're sick of him taking over. I would like to upgrade my status from meager co-host to host.
And I'm back.
No, you're not. So this is the first segment. This is the news from Terror. Not much has changed in how the segment is going to take place. So I'm sure every intro that Matt has done for it is ringing true for you. So we're going to jump straight in with previous hobby commitments. And as I'm talking, I feel like I should go first. So last month, I said that I would do build my Thanatar, paint nids, which was a non-disclosed amount of Tyranids, which, success, both have kind of happened.
Hold on. Oh, whoa. It can't be excess. It cannot be a success if it's kind of happened. It either happened or it didn't. It is.
So in theory, it's happened because I have fully painted one Tyranid.
You can see my hand motion is kind of that.
Okay, let me explain.
Do or do not. There is no try.
So the Thanatar is built in segments. So the torso is separated from the legs, but the legs are posed. The gun isn't on the torso because I'm going to do that. I'm going to paint that separately. And the arms, I need to bend some of the resin because, you know, Forge World.
Fair enough.
So yeah. It's built to a point where tomorrow, if it's dry, not snowing, I'm going to take it outside and do some spray painting and kind of get it to start getting paint ready so I can paint while editing the episode.
Cool.
Tyranid-wise, midway through the month, I actually got all my Tyranids out to kind of take stock. I went and purchased some white spray paint. And I was like, I'm going to paint all of these Tyranids. Like, this is happening. I don't care. I need to get them out of the way. So I laid them all out on the table and I was looking at them thinking, oh, there's a lot of Tyranids. There's a lot of unpainted Tyranids. So what I decided is, screw it. I'm going to batch paint all of my Tyranids.
Yeah, that's not going to last.
So the Tyranids have been split into two groups, which are Gene Stealers and Other. So Gene Stealers.
That makes sense.
So Gene Stealers and Other. Right. So the Gene Stealers were green because obviously Matt's color scheme when he gave them to me. So they are now sprayed white.
Yep.
Waiting to be painted in their batch. And the Other was pretty much then split into another three segments. So we've got I basically just on the board just split them into three. So I batch painted the first segment. That is basically done bar basing and finishing touches, like, you know, yellow around the eyes, bit of painting and gloss painting the bile that's coming out of their mouths. So they're done. The next group down have their primary colors painted on them, so all of the skin tone is done and the carapace is black with some purple on it. So they're at that stage, and I've got a set which are the ones that I brought today, which is just the skin tone is done. So successfully I have painted one start to finish because that was while I was editing. But they are going to get done. I'm really passionate about, and especially playing the games today of the mission from later, seeing the ones that were painted and how good they looked on the board. I just really want to get them done now. So yeah. I'm going to carry on riding this rapid river of painting and basically just keep trying to plug through the batch painting. And actually, I think for an army like Tyranids, batch painting is probably the best way of doing them because they are so mind-numbingly boring that it just needs to happen.
Okay, yeah. I can see, like, that mindset. I just could never get there. Like, it's just so soul-destroying.
Yeah, it is. It is. But what I've been doing is painting while listening or watching Twitch or to Netflix or something, something in the background. So I'm not... because I've got all the paints laid out. I've got the method written down. It's effectively just paint by numbers. These things are never going to win Golden Demon, but they're going to look good on a board. They're going to look in place on a board with painted models. So that's the level I want to get to. So it's just paint by numbers. It's just all the skin tone done. Okay, great. That's all done now. It's all of the armor painted black. Great, that's done now. Now heavy dry brush of purple. Great, that's done now. It's literally just. Oh, what was that person talking about on Twitch? And yeah, so I think it's the best way for this to for me to make this actually happen and me have a painted Tyranid force and get that done.
Get playing it,
yeah. And the Thanatar today, I sat there today and built it with Matt's help and Blue Tack and whatnot. And that's really, I'm really happy how it's coming out. It's quite a dynamically posed walking forwards. And
cool.
And yeah, so that needs to be sprayed. And hopefully I can get that one finished this month as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's been a pretty positive hobby progress type month. So that's good.
Good.
Right. We've taken you up to here, really high. I'm now going to take us down really low.
That's good, because I'm somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. So we'll end up on a semi-high. right. My previous hobby commitment was to build the rest of the Salamander Marines and to build Vulcan in sub-assemblies. We're just going to say no. I built some, but not enough. There are other things that are quite happening in my life at the moment that have taken over.
We all have them. Like, Matt had a baby.
Yeah, indeed. I got six episodes into doing the podcast.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I got married and moved into a house. And yeah. Yeah, it's just these things happen, don't they?
They do indeed. So, yeah, that's, yeah, my hobby commitment.
Fair enough. I guess I'll jump in now then. So my hobby commitments were to have all my Night Lords airbrushed and washed. That's with the Dragunov Nightshade, I think it's called. And a full 2x2 section of my Zone Mortalis walls built. So that's the basic level of just getting all the plasticard cut to size and glued to the walls. Not the best month. It's been a bit of a frustrating month. Not by any chance. I was ill for about a week and a half, like really badly ill. So that wiped out ages, and then work stacked up, so I had to catch up on that. And when I was getting home, I was just too tired to focus and lots of rubbish. I eventually, actually this week, got my airbrush out after having a frustrating occasion, which I will get to. But yeah, so I airbrushed all of my Night Lords other than the two drop pods, so a regular drop pod and a Dreadnought drop pod. Both blues are on. They didn't get washed, unfortunately. That means that Kerr's 7 Recon Marines and my Contemptor Dreadnought and both arm sets are now airbrushed and ready for the paint.
Cool.
Which is really good. I was really happy that I got that done. Otherwise, it would be as low as Neil's has been. The frustrating occasion with the airbrush was that I got it all out kind of, I had a couple hours before work and I thought, I'm going to try and get these guys done. And yeah, it was a bit of a rush and everything like that. I didn't do anything wrong, I don't think. I set it all up, got it ready, and just no paint was flying through, like whatsoever. Getting air, but no paint. So then I took it all apart, cleaned it, soaked the nozzle, thread the needle through it to see if there was any paint in there, nothing coming out. Rebuilt it, thought, okay, maybe there was something that I've just missed and I've got it out and I've definitely cleaned it properly. Yeah, I've done it enough times now to feel fairly confident in that. And then suddenly a little bit of paint. Okay, maybe this is going to work. And then no paint whatsoever. Then it started splurting paint.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what is going on? And I got so frustrated that I just chucked. I cleaned it all again because I didn't want to leave it uncleaned. And then chucked it all away and went, screw this. I'm angry. Grr, I didn't get any hobby done. Really set out my day badly, to be honest. And that day was not a good day in general. I ended up changing the nozzle just to see instantly. I was like, I will soak this old one and just see if I can get anything out and, and really go for it third time. But I put a new nozzle on, worked perfectly. So it's clearly something going on with the old nozzle. I haven't tried the old nozzle since it's been in soak, but
I won't worry.
I've got 5 or 6 spares of the same size. So yeah, that one's going to go. It's separate, so I know exactly where it is, so I won't mix it up.
Correct me if I'm am wrong here, but the nozzles are the disposable part of the airbrush. The bit that you get replacement parts for easy. It's like
yeah, they're not like crazy expensive or anything.
It's like tires for a car.
Yeah, I guess.
Kinda.
Yeah?
Kinda, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, they're, you know, very easy to change in and out. You just use a little spanner tool that comes with the airbrush, take it off. Put a new one on.
Okay.
I think Neil bought me like 6 of the same size for Christmas, maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I just changed out and it worked perfectly, so I was really happy about that. So yeah, really frustrating time to a really good time. again, mm-hmm. it was a couple hours before work and everything worked perfectly and everything got airbrushed. So it showed me that when things work, you can just get things done when you've got that little bit of time.
Yeah.
But when things suddenly don't work for you, stop while you're ahead. Don't. I really pushed it and then was like nearly late for work and it just ruined the rest of the day. So I think there's space to try and squeeze hobby in, but to just be clever about it and know when to quit before it becomes an issue and affects your wider life, I guess. Sadly, nothing on the Zone Mortalis board. Like I said, I was ill and then work backed up. I was away all last weekend on work. So just, none got done. No real excuse for that.
But remember, if you build it, they will come.
They will come, yes. You know, I've played a few Zone Mortalis games on the Necromunda tiles,
mm-hmm.
and they're really good. I'm really kind of sad that I've invested in something, except I'm going to be very proud of it once it's done. And it's become that long-range project of, mm-hmm. I mean, I say become, it's always been that, but it's going to be that thing where I've got a Zone Mortalis like no one else's.
Yep.
And as long as I take my time and get everything I want done on it, it will be mine and I'll be proud of it and I'll love to have games on it. So I'm looking forward to that, but I've got to get there. It's going to take quite a while.
Let's just talk about the Necromunda tiles a bit. Like we've been playing on them as our board for
our narrative mission.
The narrative mission. And I think for the level of time that I'm going to be playing on, or the amount of times I'm going to be playing as Zone Mortalis, I think they might be a really good solution for me.
I think you're completely right.
I think, like, I get what you're saying. Your board will look 100 times better, like, than them.
Well, it'll be 3D.
It'll be 3D. It's personalized. You're doing it to match all of your armies or Tyranids and, whatever. But it's going to look really good. But I think for the number of times that I'm probably going to play and where I'm going to play, I think, like we were talking about earlier, buying two sets of the tiles or at the moment, I don't need them, so I'm not going to buy them now. But in, say, a year's time, if GW brought out a pack of all of them...
I think they will.
And then you buy a board, I'd happily buy that. Like, just having that at home just to go, right, do you want to play 1,000 points Zone Mortalis? Like, just bust out some models?
It's that ease of not having to worry about, right, okay, I need to pick everything up. It's sheets of cardboard.
Yeah.
So you just go, bish-bish-bish-bish-bish.
They'd fit in a backpack. If you got a decent sized backpack, they'd fit in the back of it.
Are they reversible?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, they flip over. Mm-hmm. There's one that's kind of more intact and one that's kind of got oozy, liquid, toxic sludge over it and stuff. But yeah, really cool. You get, just so people are kind of aware exactly what we're talking about, when Necromunda came out, the box game, you got a 3x3 Zone Mortalis type tiles.
Yep.
1 foot by 1 foot tiles, so you get 9
that are
reversible both sides. And they match the Zone Mortalis tiles layout, at least, of the Zone Mortalis from Forge Rod.
Mm-hmm.
The squares are still 2 inches each, so really easy for measuring and movement and stuff. The walls are the right shape with the wider kind of end pillars.
Mm-hmm.
Really good resource, and you could easily pick up 2 sets and you've got enough for a 4x4. And that's what you play most of the time for Zone Mortalis. And you can probably pick that up for £40, both sets off of eBay, probably. Yeah, rough guess. Yeah. I'm guessing people are selling the tiles for about £20 a set. So it's a guess. I haven't looked, but I feel like that's about right. So in some ways, thinking about that, I'm like, man, that would be so much easier. It would be fine. I could build 3D walls to just go over the 2D walls, and then suddenly I've got pretty much a 3D board. But I've started and I've committed and I am dedicated to getting it finished. So, hopefully more work on that. It's kind of becoming the side project. I don't think it'll ever really appear in my hobby commitments, or at least until I really want to get something done, like a terrain piece for it or something. I imagine it'll be the thing that will pop up in the bonus hobby progress, hopefully fairly regularly, alongside getting my Night Lords done and then whatever 40k project I'm on to next.
Cool.
Cool.
Awesome. So purchases. Neil?
purchases. Well, here's to time to reveal what's in the box.
Oh, yeah, what's in the box, Neil?
I forgot to post up another picture.
What's in the box?
What's in the bag? right, okay, so my purchases for this month are, in one of the boxes came two rock moulds from Woodland Scenics. So these are moulds that you can pour plaster of Paris in, hydrocal plaster, whatever type of casting plaster you want to.
Would filler work?
No, because it's not liquid enough.
No, but you buy the powder one. Buy the powder one and then just mix up a watery batch.
I don't know whether it'd be strong enough.
Hmm. Okay. I have some.
It might be worth a go.
Yeah, I have some. You can always give it a go.
Yeah, give it a try.
I don't need it.
On
that's the
smaller,
thing.
On the smaller ones. And yeah, you just basically make up a watery mix of plaster, pour it in, let it set, and then 20 minutes, 40 minutes later, you've got rock faces. So yeah.
They're so, really cool, useful things. Mm. I bought a set of pre-made ones by a little company on eBay once for my realm board. Mm. And they look really good. You put them at the top of the hills.
Yeah.
And they instantly make it feel a bit more mountainous because there's these big jagged rocks sticking around rather than just nice, flowy, smooth hill. So yeah.
So the first box contained two of them.
It was a big box for just two.
Yeah, it was. and then the second box, one of the moulds is quite deep.
Right.
It's sort of like 2 inches deep at the base of the rock. The second box contained another two.
Okay.
And then, so I've now got four moulds, which is great. So I can just have them sitting in individual Tupperware trays.
And they're all
sand.
Different.
They're all different. So I just like have them sitting in trays and then I just pour plaster over them. Job done. And then in the bag, I bought some flock from Luke at Luke's APS range of foam flocks and clump foliage.
Oh, clump foliage.
Yep.
That sounds good.
Say, what's in the bag? Well,
yeah, what's
would have
in,
looked
what,
very suspect.
What's clump
Here's
foliage?
Here's some green clumps in a bag.
Yeah, quite
what's
exactly.
Green, what's clump foliage?
It's, I think, like shrubberies.
We have some. There's some in there.
I was expecting, some in there, yeah.
I was expecting him to say, we want a shrubbery.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
There's some
yes,
in there.
We are the knights that
yes,
say
there is
neat.
Some in there.
So then, the weird things that look like algae.
No, that's kind of a clump foliage. That's lichen.
Right.
Yes.
But this is sort of like
lichen.
Like lichen. No, it's, not like, it's not like lichen.
It's not like lichen, it's like a lichen though.
It's basically a sort of like a lump of loosely formed foam that you can tear apart. It's in sheets, so you can tear smaller bits or bigger bits, and then you just put them to hide mistakes, as Mel the train tutor would say.
Yeah.
Matt, you could cover them all over your army.
That's what I use sponge chipping for. Sneaky, sneaky. That's why my Night Lords are so battle damaged. It's not the effect, it's just cover up. Oh, yep, went over the line there. Dab.
So true.
So yeah, that was my purchases. And what's in the box?
Nice.
Matthew.
Me? Okay. I don't have any purchases this month. I kind of do just now, but I haven't paid for them yet. So I got two Betrayal at Kowth characters, the chaplain and the captain, to convert up as my dead versions of my Night Lord characters, because that project is something I still want to do. So, yeah, just picked them up from Tim because he's clearing out some stuff. And there's a few of us going through that at the moment.
I need to do it. I just need to do it.
Yeah, well, Chris is really kind of cutting crazy back, which is really cool. He fancies some more space and he's got models in mind that he wants to get. So he's going to generate that funding by getting rid of a load of stuff, which is great. I'm feeling very similar right now. Like, At the moment, I'm thinking the main chunk of stuff that's going to be going is going to be orc-related. Not because I'm getting rid of my orcs or really cutting them down, but because I want to change their focus. So I've got chunks of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a very vehicle-heavy force in 7th edition.
Yes.
And actually, I think I want to do much more kind of horde walking forward with walkers, orcs. Very goths.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So I'm tempted to get rid of, you know, not necessarily every vehicle, but some. Like mm-hmm. I've literally probably got something like 8 or 9 trucks and 4, 3 buggies.
I'll take your buggies.
Very possible. One is kind of earmarked by Adam. He did rub his nuts on it and everything. So I should probably...
That's how Adam marks his territory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I should probably send that to him at some point. Come back to England and you can have it, Adam. There you go.
It's almost worth the couple of £100 ticket.
Exactly, exactly. It's that good a model. No. and I've got a couple of battle wagons. One mm-hmm. that I really like with the death roller and the third party, I think it's Cromlech, missile turrets. I really like that one. I've got another one that I picked up cheap and painted up quickly because I wanted to run a couple of battle wagons for some reason. So I might pick... you know, that one and just get rid of that one, generate some funds for Salute next month.
Yep.
Because that's happening. And I suppose this is the episode where we should probably tell people that me and you are going to Salute now.
Yes.
I know we've been probably mentioning it a couple of times, but me and Neil are going to Salute.
We are indeed.
Sam's still maybe trying.
Mm, yeah, it's looking less and less likely now.
Oh, no. But yeah, so we'll be there, hang out with us, chat with us, come up to us. We'll be wearing podcast T-shirts.
Yes.
And yeah, should be a fun day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I need to generate some money for that and just clear some space and push on with other things like a new Catachan army that I've tricked myself into doing.
How many points did you written up a list?
I've got 1,000 points and I've got a couple of 1,500 options. So yeah, I don't have it with me though. So I can't share it, unfortunately. But that's me. That's my purchases. Nothing... couple of models from Tim that I still need to pay for.
Yep.
And yeah, look out for a purge of minis.
Mm.
Me, it's my turn.
Yes.
So I purchased Xenos, the book. The first step in my Eisenhorn series. And yeah, so I'm reading through that. Pretty good at the moment. Pretty okay.
Mr. Abnett,
lots of descriptive words, always good. And I've also picked up a black can of spray and a white can of spray. I also picked up 2 cans of the metallic red spray for my Mechanicum.
Awesome.
And I also found a pot of Mechanicum, the metallic red paint.
Oh, well, well done. Touch-up paint.
Yeah, well, I'm not too convinced, however... The guy assured me, not that he was selling it to me or anything, that it would look just the same as the spray paint. So
yeah, spray a panel and give it a go. Just spray something that you don't need. And...
What I think, so the reason I've got it is because, you know, like a little bit of touch up and stuff, and sometimes you miss the odd sliver of panel when you're spraying or when you paint something black again or whatever.
Yep.
So it's primarily for that reason. But if it's not, it's not. It'll be red and it should be shiny, so it should just blend in. Like I have actually just painted one panel on one of my Castellacs, just painted it red, and nobody's noticed yet. So
okay, cool.
So it blends in. It's red. It will be red. It'll just be a shiny red. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
So that's really all I've bought. I'm not really need anything at the moment.
Like, that's great though.
I'm gonna need my some more 30k soon, but there's no point getting it until I build this paint this Thanatar.
Get the Thanatar built, painted, you know, happy with it all and based and everything, and then that's everything you've currently got painted.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to then add, doesn't it?
Yeah. So we'll be going to we're going to Amsterdam in April. I've already found the GW.
Awesome.
So I'll probably pick up 2 boxes of Skatari, there we go, that's the word.
There we go.
Pick up two boxes of Skatari.
And they're going to be your thralls, aren't they?
They're my thralls, yeah.
Cool.
I was looking at the Forgeroid site.
Oh. Are you going to paint the flag of the Netherlands on them somewhere?
On one of their cloaks, it will be the colours. I do think that I will paint little motifs of cannabis on them as well. See if anyone notices.
That might be a step too far.
No, I wouldn't do that. That's not that. But no, so I'm really excited. I'm going there, so I'm going to pick them up. So I'm kind of just... I'm in the same place Matt was. I've got loads of armies, and I don't know if I want to do them anymore.
No, fair enough.
Like, so my Grey Knight, I've got Grey Knights that I'm not really that fussed about the new codex.
No, okay.
I think I'm holding on to them because it was our escalation.
So you've got more of a sentimental attachment to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of, your 2,000 point, 1,500 point.
2,000 point escalation that we did. And they all, in theory, they were my first fully painted army.
So
I do feel... not obliged, but I do feel like I should keep them to a certain degree. But I know if I go and repoint them, I'm going to have to buy more and paint more. And I've got a 2K and a 1750 guard detachment I can run. And I've got my Blood Angels, which I'm more passionate about now, but Devastation of Baal's out.
Yep.
So I've got those two. And realistically, do I need a Grey Knight army now? Like...
You need a display cabinet.
I could do, and that's the other thing. I don't necessarily need to sell them for the money to buy more. Like I'm gonna buy my 30K regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if I was gonna go and do another 30K army, then I'd probably need to do it then.
Maybe.
But I have got a lot of odds and sods, like my Chaos Force. Well, I'm not that bothered about Chaos at the moment. So I could get rid of that as well. But that's it. Like I've got what? So Grey Knights and Chaos could go. I have loads of additional Blood Angel units that can go.
Yep.
Like I might do what the guys are doing, just batch it all up, put it in a box and just sell it on eBay. And even if I get like 100 quid, 200 quid for all of it, it's still 200 quid worth of a 30K force that I could buy.
I just can't do it.
It does pain me because I don't need to sell it. I don't need to sell it.
No.
But it's just not getting used. And I have to take it out of the way to get other stuff out of the cupboard. So it's more annoying.
Put it at the back.
No, it doesn't work that way. So, but yeah, it's just one of them things. I just look at it and think, nah.
Fair enough.
I'm probably not going to play Grey Knights anymore. But then I could. They might be really good. Yeah. But the thing is, they're purple. Who's going to buy purple Grey Knights? I'll just keep them. I'll just keep them.
Just keep them. Right, okay. Shall we move on to bonus hobby progress?
Yeah, cool.
Right, I'll start first. Technically, diddly squat. I haven't done anything. But I have been researching into casting powders and trying to find source a reasonable priced type of plaster to cast the rocks out of. Which has proven more problematic than I thought it was going to. Just looking at sort of people's reviews. Oh, yeah, you should use this type of casting powder or this type. Hydrocal's the best. But, yeah, I think I'm going to probably go with Plaster of Paris. So I just need to find a cheap supply of that. And Bob's your uncle.
How what do you mean cheap supply?
Well, you know, I don't want to be paying out like for say 10 kilograms. If I need that much, I don't want to be paying out like 30 quid for it. I want to be sort of, you know.
Sorry, the last thing I heard before I left the room was cannabis leaves and then came in and I don't want to buy 10 kilos.
Yeah, can't smoke that much. It hurt my lungs.
Your old lungs.
My old lungs. but yeah, so I just want to try and find a reasonable price for a reasonable amount of Plaster of Paris. Or
so suggestions on a postcard, really, then?
Yes.
Awesome. That's something the new group could do.
Yes.
Do it.
Right, okay.
Do it now.
Who's going to go next?
Go on, Matt.
Bonus.
Okay, cool. So I didn't achieve this. So I wrote this in like, I'm going to do this, and then went to sleep. So I've been carrying around my Night Lords in my KR case, but dubiously, shall we say. Inventory fine, inventory mm-hmm. trades, but nothing bespoke for the vehicles. Mm. So I thought, all right, I need to sort this out. I need to work out what my 3,000 point army is exactly, which I already know. I just need to work out what foam I need to buy
yep.
from KR so I can order it and get it sent to me, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to do that. And I was updating notes as I was writing. So I wrote in, worked out the foam that I needed, and then never did it. So, yeah, nothing from me.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that's where you shouldn't update the notes before you've actually done it.
Yeah.
So I yeah, I did do this.
I'm checking.
No, I was just thinking in my head. I did. So I kind of went over mine earlier. So I sprayed the new gene sealers. I guess it all kind of goes into my normal hobby progress rather than bonus. But I did decide on the batch painting of Tyranids to just get them done. I have been toying with another list idea of 30k, which I haven't quite got to the bottom of yet. But it's okay. It's fine. It'll be okay.
Whatever it is, it's not going to be cheap.
Be excited.
No, it's not.
I'm excited.
This is why I
do you know what? It's excited because I don't have to do it. That's how excited I am.
Do you know what I'm most... No. Yeah, this we were talking while you left the room about getting rid of armies.
Oh, right. Wow. Like, just, I'm not playing that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I talked about my Grey Knights. Okay, I'm not playing them anymore. But then I was talking about how sentimental feeling towards R2K escalation.
I go through that all the time. Like, my Tyranids, technically I have done that, but I've got that 500 points of Gene Stealers with a Lictor and a Broodlord, my mm-hmm. favourite units. And it's a fun little 500 point Zone Mortalis list, and I've played it twice and had a blast with them.
Cool.
So that has kind of taught me that actually making a new plan for them, whether that's changing your list up, whether that's cutting them down, giving them a new purpose, you know, like there's new kill team rules coming.
Mm.
So going, do you know what? These guys have always served me well. I'm happy with how I posed them or painted them or whatever. These are my favorite unit from the Codex. Let's keep them and play them in kill team. Get rid of everything else. But I think there's an opportunity to go a different way with your hobby.
Yeah.
Rather than just clean out, right, I never have to think about that again.
Mm.
I think that's the easier option. I definitely felt that way the other day about my orcs. I am very sorry, Adam. Don't hurt me or be upset with me. Too disappointed with me. But yeah, I was like, do you know what? I haven't played them in ages. The Codex isn't coming. They're all fully painted, which would kind of worked in some weird way in my head against keeping them. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Neither do I. I was having a weird moment, I think. I think it was probably the day that I was having issues with the airbrush, and I was like, screw everything, sell everything. But yeah, I was just like, get rid of this whole army. Don't have to think about it. New Codex comes out. I don't have them anymore, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the orcs, so why would I ever do that? That's the thing. Yeah. I love Gene Stealers and I love Lictors and the Broodlord and that whole idea. Why would I get rid of them? Yeah, I'm tempted to do a little Gene Stealer cult army just because I like them. And that's, I have changed my way of hobbying to, rather than this large collection, which I started at with my Space Wolves, I think hit 8,000 points at one point. You know, I had 8,000 points of Space Wolves fully built and base coated. You know, not painted at all, and there's still loads of them. But yeah, they were base coated grey, not just the plastic they come in. They had some paint on them. Thank you, Neil. And that was the big thing. That's what I was going to do. But then your eye gets pulled towards all these, you know, really good looking, established background races and armies. And you go, oh, but I want to do that. And it draws you away from that big project. So actually doing lots of smaller projects means you can, you know, dip your toe, but not spend hundreds of pounds for us on it. And also actually achieve something and feel like you're working towards completion and then moving on to the next thing you want to do.
So it's not like somebody's going in your face, look at the shiny, shiny. It's more like, look at the shiny, shiny.
Yes, that's what gets me constantly. That little whisper, like, there's two Marbo models in Southend. Thanks, Mark Frost.
Look at the shiny, shiny.
That was a painful day. I was like, oh man, I really don't want it, but I do want this.
I really do.
Yeah, I really just needed that model. And apparently an army.
I told you you didn't need an army.
I know, but I can't help it. I can't help it. Where? How did we end up here? What happened? Oh, you were talking about getting rid of armies, and yes. I jumped in. What were your conclusions or thoughts?
I don't know. What was that?
I don't think we really agreed on anything.
Okay. I So out of them, it's like the Chaos Force I have and the Grey Knights and the additional Blood Angel units that I have that haven't made it into my 2K. It's those units that I kind of think about getting rid of.
Cool.
But it's just about, I could keep the bikes. But it's just one of them things, you know, you go through thinking about it every now and then, and it's just, I might just gather them all together and just look at them for a bit.
I'm really struggling to think of a quote that would be suitable for now.
Okay.
I'm really struggling for it. That wouldn't give it away too much. But I've got nothing.
That was the race in Daytona, that quote. Do you not get that one?
Anyway. If you ain't first, you're last.
That's good. That's fine. We can go with that one. I don't know. I think I probably will get rid of them eventually. I just need to get over the emotional part of...
There's always that tie. Like I say, just think of a new way of doing them. Yeah, or a small zone mortalis force. Most of your Grey Knights are infantry anyway.
Mm.
It means no Dread Knight, and it means no Storm Raven.
Yeah, that's fine.
And and the Razorback.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fine.
But you know what I mean? Then it's just like, okay, cool. I'll have Crow or a new HQ if you want to go a new way.
Yeah.
And the models that you currently have and go, cool, this works. This will be my Zone Mortalis.
It does mean it's by the Codex.
Or it does. Or this will be my new Kill Team Force once the Kill Team comes out.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, when you start dropping down to smaller army projects, things are... You know, especially if you're doing things like Kill Team or Zone Mortalis, you can't have some of the bigger toys.
No.
Because there's not the points for it, slash power level, or the space on the board, or the rules just don't allow it.
Mm.
So there's those sacrifices to make.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, Eldar, like, I love the Wraith Knight. I'm more and more like the Wraith Knight. So I think if I ever did an Eldar force, it'd have to be high enough for me to logistically have a Wraith Knight in and be able to play it.
Yeah.
Or get it for the night game. What's it called? Renegade?
Yes, yeah.
That we've always talked about doing. Yeah. I should just get on with and do that and just buy a Wraith Knight. but yeah, you know, find different avenues to keep that sentimental connection, but be logistical and reasonable about your time and energy towards that project.
Yeah.
That allows you to then spend more time on new ones or things you're more excited for. That would be my kind of advice. And I listen to that and then I buy a 4K worth of something. You know what I mean? Like, it gets you, this hobby. It's so weird.
Yeah. Especially the boxes, the terrain above my... Oh, God, whatever. No, get over it. No, moving on. Games of the month. So, Matt, do you want to talk about your game first?
Yeah, so I played Chris today, a Heresy game. My Night Lords versus his Word Bearers. We've played twice at 2K now, actually. Which is cool. He's the only person I've played at 2,000 points. And I played him twice.
Well, I didn't even know you guys were playing.
Yeah, well, we had to be finished by the last recording, which was like December or something. So of course we're ready.
No, I didn't know you guys were playing.
Oh, as in today?
Yeah.
He'd asked me if we wanted to play the new mission that was released on the Horus Heresy Weekender.
Okay, what was that mission?
I can't remember what it was called. Basically, your two HQs, two HQs and their retinue meet in the middle of the board and are trying to negotiate an armistice, which goes wrong.
Of course.
And your two forces are deployed on the short table edges. And turn one, you can't target or shoot or do anything really with the HQ units and their retinue. Everyone else can go at it. The mission is to kill the enemy warlord for breaking the armistice talks. And if you did so, you got 5 victory points, which was the main victory points of the game.
Oh, okay.
You are in the middle of the board being faced down by an entire legion army.
Mm-hmm.
So both of our HQs went, well, I wouldn't say fairly quickly. My guy survived a bit longer. But my guy, when he could, decapitated Chris's HQ and then ran and hid in a building and was kind of making little assault moves because he'd lost quite a lot of his Terminators.
Mm.
And then eventually just got shot down by weight of fire in like the last two rounds. And it ended up being a draw, actually. I got the first strike, so I got a mission point for killing something in the first turn,
mm-hmm.
Which was my Leviathan Dreadnought came down, drop pod, shot its gravity gun. I can't even remember what it's called. Grab bombard.
Yes.
And it scattered back 12 inches and landed on top of him, which was amazing. You know, with the minus of BS, just landed straight on him. Luckily, he didn't do any damage. And then I shot the Phosphex discharger, which luckily didn't scatter and wiped out the entire LAS cannon squad that were like aiming at him. So that was quite helpful.
Yeah, that thing's quite nasty.
Yeah, it is pretty nasty. But then the turn after, Chris charged two regular dreadnoughts into it and just ripped it apart with chain fists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did some damage to them.
Yeah.
They were alive at the end and the Leviathan was not.
Mm. Well, you immobilised one.
I immobilised one in the combat.
Yeah.
And took two hull points off it.
Yeah.
And the other one I took two hull points. So they both had one hull point left each. But I just didn't have the attacks. If I had more attack dice, I would have probably wrecked one, if not both of them.
Yeah. What? How many wounds does your Leviathan
hull
have?
Points.
Hull points, sorry.
Four, I believe.
Oh, so you dealt just as much damage as you
yeah,
got.
Yeah, I did well. I wasn't disappointed with its performance. Killing five LAS cannons and crippling two dreadnoughts was pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially in that was a round and a half, technically. That was like it died in the round one.
Yeah.
Which is just pretty nuts. But yeah, it was a fun game. My Night Lords felt very out of it. They couldn't really infiltrate very well because the way the scenery just was deployed and the mm-hmm. mission set up. So they kind of deployed pretty much as normal and then just ran forward for the first couple of turns trying to catch up to my HQ, which took a brunt of the force. And then the only other unit that did I was really happy with was my flyer, my lightning strike flyer.
Ooh.
It came in and blew up one of the dreadnoughts with its Kraken penetrator missiles. And then next turn did a bombing rung and killed 10 Marines. Killed, 10 Marines with its Phosphex bombs, which was pretty nice. Phosphex is amazing.
Filthy.
Yeah. And then I think it blew up the other dreadnought. It flew off the board and then came back on turn five and blew up the last dreadnought. So got both of those for killing my Leviathan. but yeah, so I had first strike, killing the Warlord in a challenge because that was my Warlord trait. So I got bonus point. And killing the Warlord. So I had seven.
Mm-hmm.
Chris finished the game on six because he killed my Warlord and killed a unit in the first turn. But he had more surviving units, so he got a bonus point at the end to draw the game up.
See.
Hence how the game drew. But yeah, it was good fun. Loved playing Heresy. Really enjoy the rule set. Feels at home. I think I've played that rule set more because of it being very 7th and then Heresy compared to the little games I've had in 8th. So it still feels much more natural to talk about AP values and damage tables and hull points and templates.
Yes.
Especially with all the Phosphex I was firing everywhere. Templates are awesome.
template.
Yeah, so it was just really enjoyable. I want to play more people with my 2K.
Cool.
Throwing the challenge out there, guys, if you're listening from our gaming group. Here I am. Come face me.
Here I am!
They're undefeated, my Night Lords at 2K. Play two games, 1-1, drew one.
I'll play them.
Oh, damn. issues.
Oh, we haven't got any vehicles. Oh, you got your Leviathan, I guess.
Anyway, and a flyer.
That was my game, gentlemen.
Neil.
I've had a game.
I know. It was miraculous.
Yes. It hurts lots.
Oh, yes. I was thinking, what? What's going on?
This is when you played Frosty, right?
No, that was last month. I'm talking about the game that we played earlier for the narrative mission.
Ah, yes. It was an interesting run. But was Frosty last month?
Yeah.
Okay. Did we ever talk about it?
I don't know. Maybe we decided not to mention it because Neil got so punched in the face.
No, I mentioned it.
Okay.
I mentioned it last month, yeah.
Memories are slow.
So I've had two games. So I had the game earlier for the narrative mission, and I had a game with Simon, Chris, and Mark from Phosphine Studios.
For all your painting needs.
and myself, that was creepy. so it was me and Mark, so we played a four-way, so 2v2.
That just sounds so wrong.
So it was four...
Four-way.
It was four...
It was a doubles game.
It was a doubles game. It was for Mark's 50th birthday. So he played his Night Lords. I played Mechanicum. Weird. And we versed Simon and Chris. So it was Word and World Bearers.
No. Word Bearers and World Eaters.
They're all the same. so played them. They're red and white. It's fine. They're all the same.
Blue.
We played the cards. We were going to play the mission.
Played open war cards, which I don't know how I feel about in 30K.
So we were going to play the one. I think we're going to play the mission that you were going to play.
Yes,
but it was like super complicated. There was four of us playing. There was 4,000 points. It would have been so. We basically just like, let's just do open war.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just see how this goes. And worst comes to worst, we'll just switch them out and put some other ones in. So the deployment was short table edges. You could deploy right on the line in the middle of the board.
Table split in half.
Yeah. So yeah. Obviously Mark and I both did many of our units, and yeah, it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. The main aim of the game was to kill the courier.
Yes.
Which I think Mark achieved turn one with his mm-hmm. with his Leviathan and drop pod. Just popped out next to
they're deadly. They are
next to Chris's backline 10 guys and just annihilated them. So yeah, that was pretty good.
Brutal.
I think ours got killed. No, it didn't because it was my knight, wasn't it? So that didn't get. Oh no, it did. Chris killed it with a Thunderhawk, not a Thunderhawk.
Fire Raptor.
They're all the same. So
definitely not.
So I think my our messenger was my Castigator knight. Which Chris took out with his flyer. The game went really well. We obviously won first turn, but we carried on playing anyway, and eventually we took out quite a substantial proportion of their unit. Simon's army is majority drop pods, and then just harass people. So you kind of have to stop going forwards and deal with what's behind you, that kind of stuff. So that was okay. I found it difficult because the stuff that I had at the backfield, my Castellax weren't particularly good at taking out drop pods, which surprised me. Because in punching and shooting, well, because Darkfire is obviously the Melter guys weren't there; they were going forwards.
Yeah, the Darkfire cannons should be perfectly fine though.
But it's 12. It's strength 12. No, it's
it's a lance weapon.
So it takes down 12, but yeah, drop pods are already 12.
But it's like a las cannon.
It's strength 8.
It was. Like one less strength than a las cannon. Missiles can still kill drop pods.
Anyway, I didn't do too well with
you. Just rolled badly.
I just rolled terribly. So we dealt with those, and then there was this really pesky squad of plasmas on top of a building that the Castigator went after and castigated them. I think that the main things I took away from the game was that I really enjoy playing the Mechanicum part. I need to play them smarter. And I think my 3K list will be better because of the units that I'm taking and bringing them in.
Yeah.
And it'll make it a more well-rounded force.
Mm-hmm. It'll feel very much more Mechanicum.
Yeah.
Because right now it's almost 50-50, if not 60-40 knights.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because you started with that in mind and now have changed your perception.
Yeah, so I think it will be very different when I have my 3K done with Knights and the Mechanicum. I feel the almost the Castellax are a little bit glass cannon, I think is the way to describe them. They're good at certain things, the way I've built them and the way I run them.
No, well, glass cannons kind of, they die very easily. Castellax do not die easily.
Not that's not what I meant. They're good at what they do. They're not what I'm used to running. Whereas, like, normally I'm good at things, good at a lot of things, but not amazing at one thing. So I run. So where you would run two melters in attack squad or a squad, I'd run like one flamer.
Yes, you've always been multi-purpose with your units.
Yeah. So and so I think that's what I'm struggling with, is because they're not, this one stands back and fires at the big, because the dark fire stuff would be amazing against, I don't know,
knights,
a Leviathan,
Typhons,
a Typhon, like Spartans. the bigger units, but there were no bigger units.
No, that's true. Our group has gone very much more infantry based.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see more dreadnoughts, like I've got a couple of dreadnoughts walking around, Darkfires are going to be problems for them.
Yeah, and it's probably just that development part. It's I think that's more about it. So,
yeah.
I didn't also say we also had the rule in place where you couldn't fire further than 12 inches.
Ah, yes, because
it was night fighting. No, it wasn't even that. You just couldn't fire more than 12 inches.
Yeah, it was an open war card.
Yeah. So that was fun. I also learned that knights, I missed the D table
it in Heresy.
No, in 40K.
Oh, right.
So I missed that D table and that mechanicum. No, it's not mechanic. and I still hate the fact that when knights blow up, they don't actually really blow up very far.
Yeah,
that is still very wrong. They should definitely have like the crash and burn type rule.
Well, they do, don't they?
No.
You put a big template over them and scatter.
No, you don't. You don't scatter.
I'm sure you do.
This is it as well. I'm also in the between phase of forgetting 7th and remembering 8th.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I've never played knights other than against them. Mm-hmm. And so I've never read that rule, but I'm pretty sure it's a scatter to represent it kind of falling over. I feel like it should scatter. Maybe I'm just putting it in my head narratively and going, well, of course it scatters because it should, and it doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm in that phase of forgetting half of one rule set and remembering the half of another rule set. So I just need to play more Mechanicum, sorry, more Heresy games and more, playing more games, just in general.
You're having this thought, I can see it going through your head of, I need to learn Heresy rulebook, and I need to learn 8th rulebook. So I need to play more Heresy and more 40K.
I need to play more games.
Oh,
because I think if I get into the Age of Empires game,
yes, we need to make that happen
in September, then I'm gonna need to be better at 7 or not calling it 7.
No, it's Heresy.
Heresy gaming, yes. And the Heresy rule set. Yeah. I need to be better at that.
Yeah, I found that today when I was playing Chris. I definitely couldn't remember my Legion rules enough. The game set, pretty good. Because it has barely changed from 7th, and I can hold that information fairly well. But where I've actually only played a handful of games with my Night Lords, I've read the rules.
Yep.
I haven't experienced the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that concretes it in my mind. So like, I forgot that I had +1 initiative all the time during night fighting. So for the first like 3 turns, I could have been hitting first before, rather than at the same time, things like that. Big things that would have made a difference.
Mm.
It's just like say playing more.
Yeah. And I think it's the repetition that will force me to learn it. So relatively, I've had very few games with my Heresy force.
Yeah, certainly the Mechanicum part.
Yeah. So I just think it's a point of just doing games, understanding I'm going to get things wrong, and just try and learn as much as possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Ooh. That's cool. So,
awesome.
So, good game.
Yeah. Right. Unfortunately, this month has not been as productive as we would have liked. But
I don't know.
We've had games.
It's been pretty good.
We've all had games, which is always good.
Yes, that's good.
Progress hobby-wise, not so good, but
shaky in places, but stuff is getting done.
Right, we're going to take a break and come back with our next segment, which is
Megazords,
a 40K spotlight.
Indeed.
Hi, this is Mark from Frostfiend Studios. We specialise in painting Warhammer armies. If you want to know more about what we do and our services, please take a look at our Facebook page, Frostfiend Studios, or our website, frostfiend.com. Look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and welcome back. This is the 40K Spotlight, and this episode we are talking about Titans of the Grim Darkness. This is our part one of our three-part mini-series covering the Imperial Titans today. And then we're going to do the Xenos Titans, kind of all clump them together, and then finish off with Chaos, because Chaos should have the last word. Anyway, today, as I said, is the Imperium Titans. Imperium Titans are mechanical, humanoid-shaped war machines, some Titan classes reaching up to above 100 feet in height. And I'm guessing that's hundreds of meters, too.
How high?
Above 100 feet in height.
Yeah, it's 30 meters.
Okay, much, much higher than that, even. I think the Warlord's, not the Warlord, the Warhound is about 14, 15 meters.
Okay.
When it's idle, so it's slightly slumped over when it's actually at full run.
15 meters?
I believe so.
It's only 50 foot. That's not that big.
That is the smallest Titan. but yeah, their presence inspires nothing but terror for the enemy and musters courage for those allied with such a god engine. A human pilot linked directly to the machine via a throne mechanicum controls the movement of a Titan merely through thought. The Imperial Titans are powered by plasma generators, which can provide the vast amount of energy required. Energy fields known as void shields are the Imperial Titans' first line of defense. The shields can absorb incoming damage until becoming overloaded, where they shut down temporarily. Imperial Titans are transported world to world by Mechanicum operated heavy transports. These are just giant ships, and they kind of chuck Titans in boxes and then fire them at planets. It's pretty awesome. You can read about it in quite a few books. I think, is it Wrath of Iron? I think the Iron Hands Space Marine Battle Book has a few Titans like landing on the planet and coming out of their giant shoeboxes. That's how I picture them in my head, anyway. Just giant kind of rectangular boxes that just hit the ground, open up, and the Titan walks out of it. That's a simple version, at least. We're going to be covering the different variants, very similar to how we did the ships of the 41st millennium. So you can find loads and loads of information on these guys, so do go check it out. If one catches your imagination, you want to learn more, do some Googling. It is worth saying, before we talk about the different variants, that they are deployed and built by the Collegia Titanica, or the Adeptus Titanicus. This is considered the most powerful military arm of the Adeptus Mechanicus. The Collegia Titanica was formed before the age of the Imperium, and was the primary military arm of the Adeptus Mechanicus before the Union of Mars and Terra. After the Treaty of Olympus, the mighty war engines of the Collegia Titanica joined the Legio Astartes and the Imperial Army in the Great Crusade to conquer much of the galaxy. As this new Imperium expanded, the Adeptus Mechanicus took many worlds for themselves. These planets were settled and converted into Forge Worlds and became the bases of new Titan legions. During the Heresy, part of the Collegia turned against the Imperium, along with almost half of the Adeptus Mechanicus, obviously the Mechanicum at the time. The traitor Titan legions even took part in the siege of the Imperial Palace. At the defeat of the rebellion, the rebel Titans were driven to the Eye of Terror, along with the rest of those who sided with Horus. And that's how we have Chaos Titan legions, which we'll cover in a few episodes' time. The Collegia has four divisions. The Divisio Mandati, or Mandati. They travel among the worlds, especially human worlds, that are outside of the Imperium and bring them into the fold. There's a small number of them that travel in these big temple-like ships that house Emperor Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And each Emperor Titan is its own self-contained unit, carries members of the Arbites, the Inquisition, and the Adeptus Terror. And it's kind of through the combination of persuasion and look at nice shiny things and we know how to do government, look, the Adeptus Terror, as well as the vast firepower of the Emperor Titan that often brings worlds that they find into the fold of the Imperium.
We do government.
Well, they pretend to, and then, you know, ship everyone off to, like, slave planets, the way the Imperium does. So that's the Divisio Mandati, or Mandati. The Divisio Telepathica, these are the psychic branch, the most secretive of the orders, I would say. They literally deal with the psychic titans and psychic protection for the crew of regular titans mm-hmm. as well, making sure that the wards are in place and various things that they set up so demons can't attack them, etc., etc. There's the Divisio Investigatus. They are the research and engineering branch, so often trying to make weapons more effective, building new less building new types now, in the current state of affairs, but certainly repairing and maintaining all the titans that are out there. And then lastly, there's the Divisio Militaris, which actually includes the full force of the battle titans that the Imperium can muster. These are the guys that strategically choose where the titans are going to be deployed in the different campaigns across the galaxy.
Cool.
And they chose Ben.
Yes, yeah. Got a few now, hasn't he? Has he got three? No, two.
And he's got a Warlord and a Reaver.
It's not a Warlord. It's not a Reaver and a Warhound.
A Warhound and a Reaver.
Yeah. Step it up, Ben.
Get the Warlord.
So the Divisios are further divided into a number of legions or orders. It's already been kind of hinted at. Groupings of Titans such as like the Fire Wasps Legion or the War Griffins Legion. They're two of the kind of famous ones in 40k lore. And each legion is a self-contained unit headed by a Grand Master. So basically, the Grand Master has leave to do what he sees fit, but has to report back to the Divisio Militaris. This is where we're going, this is what we're doing, and this is why. And the Divisio can overrule them.
Mm-hmm.
But often they're kind of left to do their own thing. Alongside each legion and order are the Sectari. It's probably the only point where they'll get mentioned in this spotlight. They're known as the Titan Guard. They are an infantry force that accompanies Titans into battle, and their Skitari warriors are meant to basically mop up survivors left in the Titans' wake. So they kind of exit the larger Titans that can transport, at least, mm-hmm. exit their kind of doors in the legs, as it is, and run around killing all the dudes that are underneath the Titan that the Titan can no longer shoot at because it's walking past what it already has done.
Yeah, yeah.
They just kind of walk around the feet of the Titan shooting whatever's left alive, which is kind of cool. Anyway, so we're going to start on the different variants. Due to possibly poor planning, I'm going first. So this is the Warhound Scout Titan. I thought I'd start with tech specifications of the Warhound. There's no real difference between the two patterns. So if you know your Titans, especially the Warhound, there's two versions. There's the Mars and the Lucius pattern.
Is that the growly wolf face one?
The Lucius is the growly wolf face, yeah.
Right, okay.
And other than preferred armaments, aesthetics like growly wolf face, and slightly thicker armor on the Lucius variant, they pretty much have the same specs. So for the sake of time, I'm going to cover the Mars pattern.
Cool.
So it's Warhound Titan. Its main armament is normally a plasma blaster. Secondary is a Vulcan megabolter. These can be changed out due to the Princeps' choice.
Mm-hmm.
Forge World of Origin Mars. The crew, it has a Princeps, a Tactical Moderati, a Weapons Moderati, a Tech Priest Engineer, two Weapon Servitors, a Reactor Servitor, Shield Generator Servitor, and four Servo Skulls. So very light on crew. Doesn't have any transport capacity. So the Warhound Titan can traverse 100 degrees as mm-hmm. it rotates its guns to pick out enemies. In terms of elevation, it can go from minus 33 degrees to positive 36 degrees. So you can just about shoot the sky, possibly, more kind of just above straight ahead, and can shoot guys pretty close underneath it with minus 33, to be fair.
What happens if they go at it single file right in the middle?
It's not a knight, Neil. That's an old rule for the knights.
Do you reckon you'd ever
old wounds.
Do you reckon you'd ever buy the Legio Titanicus Titan Maniple on Forge World?
It's like £900, isn't it, or something?
£3,000.
Oh, okay. It's a massive amount of Titans.
It's all of the Titans.
Oh, okay. That's so kind of cool.
It's two warlords.
What?
Oh no, sorry, that's the volcano cannons. Ignore me, sorry.
Okay.
It's a warlord, two warhounds, and two Reavers.
Wow.
Love that.
Anyway, The power plant is a Type 14 plasma reactor. Its main ammunition is unlimited and comes from the reactor for the plasma blaster.
Mm-hmm.
And the secondary, it holds 14,000 rounds for its Vulcan megabolter. Which actually feels like it's not enough. I just feel like that's going to be spitting out bullets all over the place.
Well, I suppose you don't use that as an anti-infantry weapon.
Yes, but Warhounds do enjoy doing that. We'll get to that a bit later on. In terms of weight, it weighs 410 tons. This is the baby Titan. Its length is 12.1 meters. Its width is 11 meters. And height at rest is 14 meters, which is tends to be taller than it actually operates in. Because it kind of lurches forward as it runs. Its ground clearance is 6.5 meters. The superstructure is made of 95 millimeters of layered ceramite and adamantium, as is the hull. So quite thick plating. Its max speed on road, I'd imagine flat surface is what I read that as, is 58 kilometers per hour.
Well, that's quick.
Yeah, these guys are very quick. And the especially for what they are and how much they weigh.
Mm-hmm.
And their max speed off-road on, you know, dodgy terrain, as I call it, is 42 kilometers per hour. They have no transport capacity. They are guns, and running. That is their job.
They are the gun runners.
They are indeed. That's not a bad name for a Warhound if you ever get one. The gun runner.
No, I'm not buying one.
No.
You should buy one.
I kind of really want one after doing this. But anyway, Warhound Titans are primarily designed as reconnaissance missions, believe it or not, and terror raids deep behind enemy lines. As the eyes and the ears of the Legion, they typically range far ahead of the main battle group and operate in pairs in order to outmaneuver larger Titans that they may encounter. It make me think of Velociraptors.
Mm.
So Velociraptor versus the T-Rex in Jurassic World.
Yes.
Less jumping and biting, I guess, but more plasma shooting.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well done.
I got the right theme.
It was the right theme.
This didn't go da-da-da.
Yeah.
Da-da-da.
Which easily happens with those.
Loads
two.
Of people do that, yeah. In major engagements, they prefer to operate on the flanks and seek out soft targets, such as enemy infantry, battle tanks,
Town.
Against which, yes, they like sushi. Their lighter Titan-grade weapons can cause immense damage amongst those targets. A Vulcan Megabolter will just cut through infantry like nothing.
Yeah.
Plasma Blaster, just, you know, smoking boots time. You just let...
No. No boots.
Just literally just vaporize dust.
Dust. Yes, no, dust.
Oh, Neil, you and your quotes. So Warhounds take the role of the ambush predators, which was a phrase that I read and then laughed out loud. Ambush? How the hell do you ambush with a Titan?
Like, you hide behind...
At dead. I'm not dead. Ha ha.
You hide behind a building that is 17 meters tall?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah.
Or a really tall hill.
get behind the hills.
It's more like a mountain at that point, isn't it? Most Titan combats take place at ranges of 5 kilometers or greater. But Warhounds can lay in wait for their prey to come closer and engage at point-blank range. This potentially allows them to defeat larger foes on their own. A Reaver Battle Titan might ton-for-ton outclass a single Warhound, but if caught by surprise, the smaller engine is far more capable of killing its larger foe.
Maybe at rest it turns itself into like a truck or a car. Like, just lowers itself down. Because I can imagine it
Transformers.
Being...
Transformers.
Looking at the picture of one.
More than meets the eye.
Looking at the picture of one, you can imagine it sort of all folding up into one thing, like a little pod. And then
it's got long chicken legs.
Yeah, but like, imagine them just folding in on themselves and then all of a sudden just jumping out and be like, surprise! And spring out.
Who were you talking about? Was it Shockwave or Soundwave?
Soundwave, yeah.
Soundwave with the cassette tape.
Yeah.
Ba-ding! Surprise! So the Warhound's ability to go... This kind of explains how they can actually ambush, to be honest. The Warhound's ability to go from idle with its main drive and system shut down to full sprint is less than 20 seconds. So it's like turning it off to turning it on and just going 52 kilometers per hour now. 20 seconds. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's just insane. I can't fathom it.
That's faster than
I feel like. No, that's a lie. I just feel like that's a lie. Yeah. Like I turn my laptop on and I'm like, right, come back in 10 minutes. Like this huge engine, 20 seconds. They can also crash through walls three times their height and destroy the Warhound's targets before the enemy's weapons are even raised to return fire.
This is how they ambush them.
Yeah, just smash through that wall.
A 17-meter high wall. I can get through it.
However, with their emphasis on speed and agility over strength, Warhounds are considered lightly armoured for Titans. They are protected by just two void shield generators and are limited in their selection of weaponry. The result is that the enemy infantry and tanks can actually pose a serious threat to these war engines without proper support. Their void shields are still capable of sustained bombardment from weapons which would destroy normal battle tanks in a single hit.
Mm-hmm.
They've even been known, apparently, to survive a direct hit from a volcano cannon, which is an anti-Titan weapon, though the force of one will knock them sideways and their shields will 100% be heavily damaged.
Clearly, I was the one that was shooting that.
Yeah, I rolled a one. Damn. if not completely offline, the shields will literally shut down to recharge because of the energy of that hit. In other cases, such firepower will result in a Titan's catastrophic destruction, leaving behind nothing but a pair of legs, which made me laugh. I love that phrase. Again, it's the smoking boots picture in a cartoon. In general, if you're wielding enough firepower to level a city block, you most likely can wreck a Warhound's day. If you've got enough to blow up a section of city, they'll take it.
Yeah.
I imagine if this Warhound wasn't moving, like somehow got immobilized or something, caught up in terrain or something, loads of like basilisk shells just raining down on their deployment could eventually take one down.
Yeah.
But their speed is their strength.
Yeah.
The Princeps controlling the Titan will have to negotiate with the Titan's machine spirit, as with all the other Titans. It's an intelligence which guides and assists in operations and is as old as the veteran war engines themselves. But that often leads to them being surly and frustrated, sometimes even resentful at being woken and put up a fight to begin with. These qualities likened by some to having to bring to heel a ferocious dog. But this can make them murderously effective.
Mm-hmm.
If the Princeps can reconnect with possibly their old comrade, often the Princeps will pilot the same Titan for their entire life. They bring them to the same page. The intellect of a man melded with the will of a beast brings that hunt to murderous intent. So with the cranky machine spirit and the wise pilot, you actually get a very murderous weapon.
And this is what makes me chuckle about the Imperium. We don't like AIs. Yeah, machine spirit.
Yeah, and we'll just plug a dude in and it's not AI, it's fine. Anyway, the Princeps sits in the forward cockpit along with the two Moderati who assist in piloting the Titan. The first functions as the driver and navigator, while the other commands the weapons and sensors. In turn, each one controls the Warhound's remote servitor slaves, which are hardwired into the war engine's weapons, void shield generators and engineering systems. The final crew member is a tech priest situated in the engine room behind the main cockpit, tasked with overseeing the smooth running of the Warhound's plasma reactor. All of them are hard plugged into the Titan and make use of hard switches. Other methods of connection to the Titan would be too easily compromised or damaged for the controlling the Titan in the midst of combat.
Imagine that sort of getting a side hit and then falling out your chair and the thing just comes out the back of your head and you're like, and one arm goes numb.
Yeah.
Just forced to the side.
There's those stories of them getting, I think, ripped out by an explosion or being rocked like that. And it takes them a long time to kind of get control. I think one of the Titans, it might have even been a Warhound, I'm trying to remember this, what book it's from, almost just goes for a run. Like, just runs off in the wrong direction. Like, no, come back. Like, it always needs that pilot's intelligence. Otherwise, this is a dangerous thing to wake up in terms of the machine spirit. Anyway, just to round off, just go through their subclasses and armaments. So there is the Wolf class. That always operates in packs of two, specializing in finding and hunting down enemy forces. That is literally their job. There's the Mastiff class, which is a pattern of Warhound that are not as nimble or well-protected as the Wolf, but are equipped and configured to act as solitary vanguards. Mastiffs specialize in flanking enemy positions to sow confusion with well-planned hit-and-run attacks. Run in, do some damage, run out while they're shooting at me so that the allies aren't getting shot.
Yeah.
That's how I picture that happening anyway. The Jackal class is a pattern of Warhound that's similar to the Mastiff, which is used in the same role but has heavier void shields. This is so they may better engage foes for a closer range combat and a longer combat. The favoured weapons of Jackals tend to be Inferno guns and Vulcan Mega Bolters, which is all very anti-inventory. It's how I'd probably build my guy, I think, if I had one.
Yeah.
Just anti-inventory murderer, run around shooting dudes. Anyway, in terms of the armaments, the Warhound has two weapon mount hardpoints. It has multi-configuration, so it can be traded in and out.
Yep.
However, Titan crews tend to develop their own particular style of combat, so they tend to stick to one certain configuration. Each Titan is built with a standard weapon configuration, which in the case of the Mars pattern is a plasma blast gun and a Vulcan Mega Bolter. But the guns available are the plasma blast gun, Vulcan Mega Bolter, Inferno gun, and the turbo laser destroyer. Which all do very different things. I mean, the plasma blast gun is heavy infantry and tanks.
Yep.
Vulcan Mega Bolter and the Inferno gun can wreck light vehicles, but are mainly there for infantry.
Mm-hmm.
And the turbo laser destroyer is a large tank, if not other Titan weapon.
Yeah.
And I kind of really want a Warhound. I like the nimbleness, the fast, the aggressiveness of them. It's not a big stand at the back thing. It's no. I'm going to run across a board. In terms of playing, I don't think I'd enjoy them as much in terms of game style, because the size of the boards we tend to play on wouldn't be big enough for me to run across a board and feel like it was worth it.
Well, I have a solution for this. Games Workshop need to bring Epic back out.
Or Titanicus, which they are planning to do.
Which is the same thing.
Well, yeah, but I think Titanicus
Epic includes other vehicles, though, doesn't it?
And inventory and stuff, yeah.
So you'd be able to have the whole hog.
Which would be really cool. I want to see what Forge World are going to do with Titanicus. They've teased it already. I want to see if it's Titans only, if it's a Titan-only game. Is it full-scale Titan game? Is it a Epic style with new models? It'll be really interesting.
If it was full scale, no one would play it.
No.
I'd imagine they could release it in both types.
Yeah.
Because they've done Titan only battles at things like Adepticon.
Yeah.
Where they have the table is the floor and they have literally like 3-foot buildings to represent hab blocks and stuff like that. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really specified thing. You couldn't release that and expect to make money off of it.
No.
But if you were bringing out an Epic version, you could just scale it up and go, here's one if you're doing one of those events,
yeah,
to support those events that do amazing things.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the Warhound. I digress. Sam, I think you're going to cover the Reaver for us.
Yeah, so the Reaver class Titan is a flexible multi-roled humanoid combat walker. Reavers are of an ancient design, predating the Age of Strife of the Imperium, and having seen action on Mars during the battles of the Age of Strife when the Mechanicus first seized control of the Red Planet. So Reaver Titans are heavier armoured than the Warhound, but not as heavily armoured as the Warlord Titans, which form the mainstay of the Titan Legion's Battle Titans, or as fast and agile. They're not as fast or agile as the Warhound class Titan.
Too many wars.
Too many. The Reaver is still a potent war engine in its own right. It was originally designed at approximately the same time as the Warhound class Titan.
I wonder if they put that out because both kits were available at the same time. Whether they've kind of tweaked the lore to match how the actual sales were like.
So the design, the Reaver class Titan differs considerably from newer designs, such as the Warlord Battle Titan, in placing the Titan's vulnerable plasma reactor towards the rear of the carapace housing. Whilst this makes the Reaver very difficult to knock out from frontal attacks, the more exposed cooling bars of the reactor make it comparatively easy target from the side or rear. I guess you're going to have this on any Titan. So whether or not it's at the front or back doesn't make a difference. But I guess if you're always going to march into the battle rather than away from it, then you've got really nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
You look like you want to talk.
It feels like the Emperor designed these. Like a 2 meter exhaust port on the back.
Yeah. Watch out for Millennium Falcons.
And T-16s.
The greater...
Got to be piloted by Jedi.
The greater speed of the Reaver over the Warlord minimizes this problem, but it does make Reavers unsuitable for heavy fighting in cities and other close terrain, such as urban assault, when they can easily be struck from all sides, behind, bottom, top, whatever. A Reaver Titan is an immense war machine. It towers 22.3 meters, so about 70 foot high.
Nice.
So the armament, medium weight Imperial Battle Titans, like the Reaver, can mount up to 3 separate Titan grade weapon systems. They are protected by 4 void shield generators and are sheathed in thick sloped armor from all sides. A single Titan grade weapon can be mounted atop its carapace, and usually an Apocalypse. This is normally an Apocalypse missile launcher, equivalent to the size of that of a smaller Warhound's size scout weapon, Titan weapon.
Wow. So the one on top is like rough kind of size of what a whole arm of a Warhound is.
Yeah.
Indeed. Larger Titan grade weapons, however, are beyond the capacity of a Reaver. Although it's not unknown for close combat weapons such as siege hammers and Titan-sized chain fists to be employed by them.
Crazy.
I'd love to have a hammer in one hand and chain fist in the other.
I think they make a chain fist, don't they, for the Reaver?
No, for the...
It's like a fist thing.
It's a fist with...
Isn't that the... Warlord?
No, I don't think so.
Hang on. I can't remember what the...
Reaver definitely can have, like, a fist, which must be the chain fist.
Bolters.
Oh, no, you're right, it's a power fist. It's an arm only, but it's a power fist.
Has it got the Vulcan-like?
No, that is the Warlord.
Oh, it is the Warlord one.
Yeah.
And then, they don't make a siege hammer, though.
Not yet. They make a chain fist, an arm.
Stick a brick on it. It'll be fine.
Get a Space Wolf flyer on a flight stand and just ram it into the end of the arm.
So the Archeo Power Claw is the one with the Vulcan Mega Bolter on it. That's for a Warlord. A Reaver can have a Power Fist or the Chain Fist.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. From Forge World. So arm-mounted primary weapons. The Reaver-class Titan carries 2 of the following Titan-grade weapons on its arms. The Gatling Blaster, the Laser Blaster, Vulcan Cannon, and the Melter Cannon.
It's Volcano Cannon.
Oh, what did I say? Vulcan. Yeah. The Volcano Cannon and the Melter Cannon. And, of course, the Power Fist as well. Secondary chassis-mounted weapons, these ones on top. Apocalypse Missile Launchers, Plasma Blast Guns, Turbo Laser Destructors, Inferno Gun, Vulcan Mega Bolter. These are all good weapons.
And the main weapons for a Warhound.
A Reaver class Titan, like all such Imperial War Machines, I keep saying museum, is commanded by an officer known as a Princept, who, like Matt said, is cybernetically interlinked to the command throne, direct to the Titan's Mind Impulse Unit, so the MIU. He's assisted by the 2 juniors, the Moderati. And considering this is a bigger machine, you would have thought they'd have more.
It runs pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, I guess so. So, of course, also there's the tech priest who attends the plasma reactor as it's the main power source, and it monitors the available power. Deployment. Reaver class Titans are most commonly deployed in shock assault roles, giving them close support to infantry and armored attacks. In this capacity, they are usually armed with a number of short-range rapid-fire weapons and a single close combat weapon. When operating as part of a Titan battle group formation, one or two of the Reavers will always be equipped with a long-range anti-armor weapon. So the origin, just got a bit of stats here. So the origin is Mars. Patterns from 1 to XIV, which is whatever XIV
14.
Is. 14. Patterns from 1 to 14.
Come on.
I don't know those. I don't need to know those. Like I said, 1 Princep, 2 Moriarty, and a Tech Priest. Moderati. Plasma reactor, 738 tons in weight. The length is 15.4 meters, width is 18.1 meters, and the height is 22.3 meters. Ground clearance is 8.25 meters. Max speed on a road, so a flat surface, is 27 kilometers per hour. It's got a 12.5 meter stride.
Wow.
It's quite big.
Nearly the stride of a Warhound laying down.
The max speed off-road is 19 kilometers per hour.
Yes, just a bit slower.
Max ammunition is 30 rounds from a power pack, or 90 rounds. Secondary ammunition is 40 missiles. The armor superstructure is 120 mil thick. So that's what, 12 centimeters. The hull is 12 centimeters. And then there's a lot of other information about designations, and there's lots of numbers, so I won't read that. That's fine. And that is all we know about the
Reaver
Battle Titan.
Wow.
I was going to say Warlord. The Reaver Battle Titan. And next up is, in fact, the Warlord, and that is being done by Neil.
Yes. So this type of Titan is the most widely used, numerous of the Titans currently. It is larger than both the Warhound and the Reaver Titan, but it's nowhere near as fast or agile as the Warhound, but it is far, far more heavily armoured and heavily armed. And its armament capability has been likened to that of smaller void warships.
That's nuts.
So, given enough time, a single warlord can just level a city or systematically destroy an entire army. Be like, yeah, you can stay over there and I'll shoot you with this one, shoot you with this one, shoot you with this one, shoot you with this one. Job done.
Yeah.
Repeat.
Yeah, it was like when Sam was reading out the Reaver ammo. And it's like 30 rounds. And you think, that's like nothing. Mm. If it has to shoot that gun 30 times, it's like wiped out
quite easily,
a city.
It's, depending on what weapon it is.
It's the big weapon. It's not like a 1,000 rounds per second type gun, like what I'd imagine a Vulcan Megabolter is. But actually, Vulcan Megabolters on the ground only fire, 40 shots?
20, isn't it?
Is it 20?
I think you can get a rule where it doubles up.
Oh, okay. So 20 shots. And you think that's for time second wise.
It's 20 rounds.
Yeah, it's 20 rounds.
Hmm. The Warlord Titan is more suited to long range fire.
Shocking.
This is my kind of Titan.
No, your kind of Titan comes next week.
Well, yeah, but this is of the Imperium Titans. This is my kind of Titan.
Okay.
And it can easily obliterate Warhound scouts, take out Reavers quite effectively with very little effort. However, there is one weakness to the Warlords. With the plasma reactor located in the abdominal cavity, whereas the Reavers at the back of that.
Yeah, and the Warhound too.
The plasma reactor in the Warlord is sort of more in the middle. So if the armor is broken around that, even heavy weapons fire can take it down.
Okay. You like crack open that and you've got a chance.
Missile in there, job done. It's protected by 6 void shields that are designed to intercept incoming enemy fire before it hits the war machine. Below the protective layering of shields are meter thick plates of adamantium, which can ward off an entire regiment's firepower as just a minor scarring.
"'Tis but a scratch." I saw that and it made me laugh. I love that quote. "'Tis but a scratch. It's just a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound.
Your arm's off. Call it a draw.
That's 2 out of 3. The Titan is a fully protected, sealed environment and can be deployed to airless moons just as easily as it can be to the plains of some beautiful verdant planet, as long as the planetary makeup can support its massive bulk.
Yeah, this thing's got to weigh.
It's going to weigh.
I was going to say weigh a ton, but the Warhound Titan's 410.
Talking of the the Warlord Titan, its weight varies from 1,000 tons to 2,500 tons.
Nice.
And on that, there are also many different indications of how tall the thing is.
Yes, that's true, actually.
We have 33 meters. We have 40 meters. We have 60 meters. And then we jump really high to 200 meters.
That is huge.
Apparently, the Mars Pattern Warlord, when sitting on its knees, is still over 30 meters tall.
Wow.
And the head is supposedly at 30 meters.
Okay, when it's crouching.
When it's kneeling down. So 33 meters is a bit ropey on that. Yeah. They are equipped with powerful aspects which allow the crew to detect targets in the most dire of environmental situations. These include radars, echolocation devices, and electromagnetic detectors, just to name a few. These sensors help build up an accurate layout of the terrain and the location of enemy targets, and they can pick up heat signatures, seismic activity, motor noise, communication signals, and even fallen masonry knocked over by fleeing targets.
Wow.
So they are some powerful sensor arrays. The crew itself is made up of a princep and a number of moderati that are located in the armoured heads. They connect to the Titan through the Mind Impulse unit. And they see the outside world through the manifold. I kind of think of this like, if you've ever used a VR headset.
Yeah.
For a game that allows you to look around everywhere.
Yeah, doing the motion.
Literally doing the motion whilst trying to talk on the mic. Doesn't work.
Amazing.
So they actually get like a whole 360 degree view of the battlefield around them, which must be really disorientated to start off with. But that's really cool to think about it like that, as if you're in a VR headset. So you can literally just look around and you're like, see everything. And then
that's got to be a game. They're going to have to do it as a game.
Yeah. Oh my God. There's red dots sort of over to my left. So everyone looks over. It's like, oh yeah.
There they
are. That's got to be a game. Like, they've got to one day do a VR Titan game. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, imagine
where
that.
The controllers in your hand are the different guns. And you've got click buttons to fire
them. Oh, could you imagine if they did like a...
That would be awesome.
A bit like a Star Trek Bridge Commander, where you each take a role.
Okay.
So you
That'd
could
be
have,
nuts.
You can have somebody as a princep, somebody as a Centaurium, somebody as the steersman.
Well, it's happened before. It's happened before. We've talked about it, and then GDW have done it mysteriously a month later. So obviously, we are their inspiration. So if Titan VR comes out, us three have to be blamed.
I just really hope that when we're playing it, you can't feel the effects on the Titan's armor, because that would really hurt.
Yeah, you're getting punched in the chest.
When they first started making these Titans, the princeps were hardwired into the machine from their command throne, and they had hard switches to disconnect, connect into. But being disconnected from the Titan takes a heavy toll, both mentally and physically. And soon, amniotic fluid tanks have to be installed.
Yeah.
For better links and less painful disconnects.
Yeah, there's plenty of these in the Black Library books.
And soon this way of connecting to the Titan became the norm. The tank is in the back of the head, while the steersman and the sensory seats are located in the chin. The head contains fire suppression systems, a weapon locker with biometric data linked to the command crew, so only they can open it.
Okay.
Which makes sense. And also access to chemical stimulants, so lots and lots of coffee.
Yeah.
Which allow them to remain in combat for up to 8 days before they have to disengage and rearm.
Wow.
So I'm guessing if they haven't got a weapon that just needs rounds, they're just using the plasma reactor to power the weapon.
Yeah, if it's a weapon, the way they can do it. I read that as if we're still fighting after 8 days, our guys need to go home and sleep.
Yeah.
Like, we'll call it rearmament, but they just need to go have a rest. and get more drugs.
There is a way to take out this type of Titan. You take a lightning-sized fighter craft or bigger and crash it into the head.
That's amazing.
That will stop...
I wish you could do that in the game. That would be amazing.
That will stop it in its tracks. The other members of crew... It's
making me think of Independence Day.
Yeah. The other members of the crew are a tech priest located at the back of the cockpit, an engine seer who maintains the plasma reactor. The crew also includes servitors slave to the weapon systems. It is possible to fire these weapon systems manually, but it's actually less efficient to do so, less effective to do so. However, sometimes it's required to do so, as the Titan's machine spirit is capable of overriding the servitors' minds in a rather brutal frenzy of machine bloodlust.
Amazing. This is what I was talking about, just them getting up and wandering off.
Yeah.
If you're not connected in properly, like, oh, I'm a giant warlord. I want to shoot stuff. I don't care what you say. It's just mad.
It's got 4 weapons. Systems, so it's got 2 arm weapons and then 2 shoulder mounted weapons. The main weaponry consists of any of the following: laser blaster, Gatling blaster, melter cannon, plasma destructor, quake cannon, volcano cannon, and any Titan close combat weapon, including the Ariok power claw. And then the shoulder mounted weapons include a double barrel turbo laser destructor, plasma blast gun, inferno gun, the Vulcan mega bolter, apocalypse missile launcher, and vortex missile.
Oh, just a giant vortex missile on its shoulder.
See, that'd be good.
It's nuts. They haven't made those yet. I think there's 2 different shoulder guns you can get.
For the warlord.
For the warlord, yeah.
They've got the turbo lasers. They're like 3 guns. And another one that I can't remember.
You have the Titan laser blasters and the apocalypse missile launchers.
Oh, missile launchers is what they've done.
Yeah.
Current patterns include the Mars Alpha pattern, an ancient class of warlord built on major forge worlds like Metallica. Spelt with 1 L.
Oh.
Anvilus.
So we don't get sued.
Yeah.
Yes. Anvilus, which also sounds like a band.
That is true. It probably is. Or was at some point.
Probably. And Mars. The Mars Beta pattern, designed to express the machine spirit within, this pattern of warlord is known to be highly aggressive and hostile.
It's like, we want to nurture this machine spirit.
Let's make it really angry. And then you've got the Lucius pattern, which is built by the Forge World of Lucius. Surprise, surprise. It's a very distinct design, and it's got more of an sort of like angular, boxy kind of armor plating, more sort of like almost like childlike how you draw a robot square boxes
yeah.
compared to the more organic
humanoid
lines of the Mars patterns.
Yeah, it's more kind of medieval knight, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the same for the Warhound. The Lucius is the boxier one with the wolf head.
Yeah. It took part in the Great Crusades. These particular patterns took part in the Great Crusades as well as the Horus Heresy, and was seen fielded by both sides during the Horus Heresy, which makes sense.
Yeah, it's crazy though, just to think. Like.
And apparently the cockpit assembly is compatible with the Mars patterns.
Okay, makes sense.
You've got the Proximus pattern, Warlord, which is a variant built on the Vorge world of Proximus. This pattern requires princeps to connect via an amniotic fluid tank. So this is the one that's the most standard, or the first one to use it.
Yeah.
With the Moderati, Steersman, Sensori, and a Famulus. Right. Not entirely sure what a Famulus is. Couldn't really find anything about them.
But it's a weird one.
I'm assuming it's something to do with the Sisters of Battle from pictures that I could find.
Okay. Interesting.
But I'm not 100% sure of that.
Wonder if it's like a faith-based person who's there saying benedictions to keep the psychic demons at
could
bay
be.
Kind of thing.
Could be.
I don't know. Complete guess.
Yeah. And then you've got the aptly named Warlord Sinister Pattern Psi Titan, which Matt will be talking about shortly.
Yeah, it's so different. We separated this one.
And then finally, we've got subclasses.
Indeed.
So the Deathbringer class Titan is the most common configuration of Warlord class Titans, and are equipped with a variety of weapons that can be used for a multitude of battlefield roles. The Eclipse class Titan is a lighter version of the Deathbringer. And Eclipse Warlord is deployed if more staying power is needed than a Reaver class Titan can provide, but a Deathbringer is not available or needed. Right, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's fine.
You need something that's a bit more powerful than a Reaver, but you might not necessarily need a Deathbringer, or there might not want to be.
There's just not one around, so this is like a Warlord with bits of armor missing. I don't know.
Dinner plates, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or a junior one, less experienced.
Yeah. More 33 meters rather than 60.
Yeah. And these guys are typically armed with volcano cannons, Gatling blasters, and apocalypse missile launchers. Next up is the Night Gaunt class Titan, and this is a variant of the standard Warlord pattern design, designed mainly to hunt down enemy Titans and destroy them in close combat.
Because why not?
Huh?
That's nuts.
Crazy. Night Gaunts are faster than other Warlord patterns, always equipped with one or two close combat Titan close combat weapons, or lighter short-range firepower.
Where's that going? A fist in one and the chainsword in the other.
Yeah, something on your shoulders.
This is making me think of just upgrade Renegade, the game, to involve Titans, and you could play this.
Yeah, god yeah.
I mean, you've got to spend the money, but you know, you could have a Warlord with two combat weapons. I could have a Warlord with a volcano cannon and a whatever else. And
when you buy your Warlord with a volcano cannon, I will buy my Warlord with two close combat weapons.
Yeah, you'll be waiting a while.
Finally, we've got the Nemesis class Titan, and this is fielded if brute power is required. So this is my kind of Titan. These machines excel in long-range firepower and siege warfare, but possess poor maneuverability. Usually foregoing close-ranged weapons, they sometimes will nonetheless field a single Titan close combat weapon to discourage any deep strikes by enemy forces. Weapons used by the Nemesis Warlords are typically a mix of quake cannons, volcano cannons, inferno guns, plasma destructors, and apocalypse missile launchers. The Nemesis is sometimes considered an Emperor-class Titan alongside the Imperator and Warmonger, presumably because its focus is on heavier firepower.
Nice. So, jumping in with the Sire Titan.
Sorry.
So, jumping in with the Sire Titan. This is a Warlord Sinister pattern, Sire Titan, and it is an extremely limited and secretive design used by the Ordo Sinister, which is a branch of the Divisio Telepathica that I mentioned earlier, of the Collegia Titanica, whatever it is. And this Titan is modified to harness the power of an alpha-grade psyker. This Titan is modified to harness the power of alpha-grade psykers to power the dreaded I can never say this word. Sinistramanus Tenebrae weapon and the Syracrux Anima array. That's what we're going with.
Yeah,
saying it again. In place of a standard Titan configuration, a Psy Titan is equipped with highly forbidden Dark Age of Technology era technology, known as the Syracrux Anima. The Titan is manned by a damned psychers who are surgically bound to the cockpit and locked in place against their will. This is a perfect idea of let's pilot this thing with mental psychers who we're going to...
Angry mental psychers.
Yeah, who we're going to glue in place.
You're going to stay in there and you're never coming out.
Yeah. They are enslaved to the blank. This is really interesting. They use blanks. Perceptor Intendant, which serves as the princeps of the Psy Titan. So a blank is a null, a unaffected
someone,
by psychic powers.
Someone who has no presence within the warp.
Yeah. So they're kind of needed when you've got all these angry psychers glued to the ceiling. This unique setup allows the Psy Titan to project psychic phenomena on a truly gargantuan scale. A Psy Titan can project waves of abject fear, psychokinesis? That's how I'd say that word.
Psychokinesis, yep.
Yeah. So a Psy Titan can project waves of abject fear, psychokinesis, and biomantic leeching of life. I don't quite believe this one, but apparently even temporal distortion.
So time dilation.
Yeah, like slowing down time.
Well, it would make the Titan look like it was walking quicker.
That's true, yeah. Make it look like it's working harder. Mm. however, the most feared and dreaded ability of a Psy Titan comes from its... Oh, this word. Also known as a Psy Cannon. So it's a Sinistramanus Tenebrae. Also known as a Psy Cannon from this point onwards. This device allows it to focus the psychic power of the bound psychers and create a massive warp breach similar to a huge vortex-type weapon. The only known type of Psy Titan is the modified Warlord, known as the Warlord Sinister class, as I've been speaking about. However, other types of Psy Titans are speculated to have existed.
This would be so cool to go with Grey Knights. Doing like a giant Grey Knight force.
I believe there are rules for this in the Heresy book for Prospero, because the Thousand Suns had some.
Mm.
It's pretty crazy. Mm. Pretty sure that's where a lot of this information comes from. From the... What do they call that book in the end? It wasn't The Burning of Prospero. It was something else. Or maybe it was.
The
book the, 7 for the Heresy series. The big black book.
Inferno?
Inferno, I think. Yeah, Inferno.
The Unexplained Leaving of Prospero.
Yes.
They got booted out.
The Wolves came.
We left on our own. No one forced us leaving of Prospero.
This one kind of freaks me out a little bit, the Psy Titan. Just the idea of you've got this blank who's a bit of a weird guy in control of this massive Titan, and they're just leeching energy from these angry psychers that, in my head at least, they've just glued to the walls and the ceiling, who are just there screaming. Like, I don't know, it just freaks me out a little bit. I don't like it.
Going to super glue everyone to the walls.
Yeah, that's what I don't know why. That's what I picture. Just starfish.
No more nails.
Or like when you duct tape someone halfway up in a lift and then take the lift down.
Yes.
Like if you've got one of those lifts that's just a platform. Like here, done that.
So next up, before we start talking about stuff that might get us arrested, is the Emperor Titan. So the Imperator class Titan is the largest and most powerful variant of the Emperor Titan ever deployed by the Titan legions of the Adeptus Mechanicus. It is literally a walking fortress and is armed with much more firepower than the next Battle Titan in size, the smaller Warlord class Titan. An Imperator class Titan is one of two classes of super heavy Titans, known as the Emperor Titans. That also includes the even more rarely deployed Warmonger class Titan. The Imperator class Titan is a general purpose assault platform, whereas the Warmonger class Emperor Titan is a dedicated fire support unit with more advanced fire control and targeting systems intended to aid its more specialized function. Both classes of Emperor Titan represent the most powerful mobile weapon platforms in the arsenal of the Imperium of Man and are often unmatched by any force deployed by the enemy. Emperor class Titans are extremely rare in the Imperium, and the Adeptus Mechanicus has lost the capability to manufacture these monstrous war engines. Due to their immense size, the Imperator Titans are not nearly as fast or agile as their smaller Scout or Battle Titan counterparts. Go figure. They more than make up for this failing with their sheer firepower and heavily armoured bulk. Tech priests of the Mechanicus consider the two classes of Emperor Titan to be avatars of the Machine God, walking incarnations of death intended to destroy all those who have displeased the Omnissiah. The Omnissiah. Design. The Imperator and Warmonger Emperor Titans stand approximately 55 metres or 182 feet. This has been known to vary as the infamous Chaos Imperator Titan Dies Ira of the Legio Mortis.
Dies Ira
of the Legio Mortis has laid siege to the Imperial Palace during the closing days of the Horus Heresy, was able to stand approximately 43 metres or 141 feet tall. A smaller size due to the fact that it had no cathedral dedicated to the God Emperor on its back, since the Imperial cult has not yet become the state religion of the official atheistic Imperium. These formidable super-heavy combat walkers are the largest and most powerful war machines at the disposal of the Imperium, with the exception of void ships. Their firepower remains unrivaled by any other land unit used by any other faction in the galaxy.
I feel like that's written by someone from the Imperium.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, fully. The size of their arm-mounted primary weapons are surpassed only by the ordnance of large vessels of the Imperial Navy. They are loaded to the brim with pre-installed weapons, and their mounts can handle the Titan weapons too big for even Battle Titans. They do not carry any of the close combat weapons, that their sole focus is on extreme firepower. Well, you can imagine that trying to run towards you, trying to knock you down with a power fist.
No.
A power fist on a giant spring would work, I guess, and just bring it back.
Mr. Gadget.
Emperor Titans are very rare and can crush many weak war engines. Taking advantage of this formidable firepower, the Imperator Titan bombards enemy positions with an awesome and relentless barrage, far out of the range of any enemy artillery. So the armament. Arm-mounted primary weapons. They can carry two, both the Warmonger and the Imperator can carry two arm-mounted primary weapons. The Doomstrike Missile Launcher, Hellstorm Cannon, Plasma Annihilator, and the Vengeance Cannon. Anything like a missile launcher from an arm, being shot from the arm, would be insane.
Of an Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how big is that missile?
Next up is the Carapace-mounted secondary weapons. They can take up to six Carapace-mounted weapons from the following list. The Apocalypse Missile Launchers, Gatling Blaster, Inferno Gun, Laser Blaster, Melter Cannon, Plasma Destructor, or Quake Cannon, Volcano Cannon, Vortex Support Missiles, and Vulcan Mega Bolters.
Six. That's crazy.
It's insane. The Imperator and the Warmonger class Emperor Titans are crewed by one Princep, and two, who commands the Titan, and a number of Moderati, who control its weapon systems, with multiple tech priests and servitors stationed aboard the massive walker to provide basic technical support. Basically, one Princep, loads of other helpers.
Yeah, just carry on expanding.
Yeah. I'm quite impressed it's piloted by one princep.
Yeah, there's still only one princep.
I suppose if you've got too many minds trying to interact with the machine spirit, things are getting out of control. Whereas if you've just got one person interacting with it.
Yeah, I imagine that this is obviously one of the best princeps in the galaxy and is, you know, being fed information by vastly more moderatis.
Yeah.
So as long as they can cope with that amount of information coming to them, then they can control that.
That's in a book, isn't it? That's it. That happens in a book where they couldn't deal with the amount of information. Like the scrap code gets in and then it just overwhelms them. Yeah. Must be. So in comparison to battle titans of all classes, the Imperator and the Warmonger are rare, with most Titan legions only being able to field three or four in a campaign. That's still not rare.
I was going
to
say, no,
rare to me rare. Is like one. Yeah. Or a half of one.
That is kind of crazy as well, because I looked up how many Titan legions there were and it was too many to even read out. I was just like, there is like 60 of them just in Imperial.
Mm.
So there's three or four in each of them.
So 180 minimum.
I suppose that's across an entire universe. So, okay, small numbers.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't feel rare in the way that we've been talking about them. But anyway, maybe we're just being a bit nitpicky.
The Imperator and the Warmonger are commanded by the most battle-hardened princeps. Their crew are composed of the finest crew members from the Titans, from other Titans within the legions. The Titan Legion's Grand Masters often use Imperator Titans as their mobile headquarters, from where they can issue commands or lead vital assaults personally. Sectors of the Imperial battle lines, or to act as a reserve force. Hang on, I've missed it. I've not blinked in a while. They can be used to strengthen vulnerable sectors of the Imperial battle lines or act as a reserve force. These Titans spearhead massive assaults when a major offensive begins, their immense firepower being brought to bear against enemy lines. Imperators are not configured to fight other Titans in close combat, relying instead on their deadly firepower to utterly annihilate their opponents before they can get close enough to engage with them. A complete company of Imperial Guard troops and Adeptus Mechanicus Cazari soldiers can be housed aboard the Imperator to guard it against infantry assaults or to be transported to vital objectives. Imagine that, like a squad of enemy, say some cultists, running towards this Emperor Titan, and all you see is like a window open in the leg and someone just throw a grenade out and close the window quickly.
I don't think that's how they're doing it. I mean, the Titan would stop moving for a second, the doors would open, everybody run out, shut them, carry on.
No, I think if they're defending, it would be a case of it would stop moving, and then the doors open, they're all standing there, and it's like, laser beam! Close the doors.
You've seen people who've built these, they've just used like bastions.
Bastion legs, yeah. Insane. So the Warmonger class, a bit more on that. So the Warmonger class is a notable variant of the Imperator Titan. It is very similar in structure and appearance, and it's unknown which variant of design came first, as this knowledge has been long lost in the Imperial's long existence. However, it is well documented that both the Warmonger and the Imperator class Titans were both utilized extensively long before the outbreak of the galaxy-wide conflict of the Horus Heresy. Though they are physically similar, functions each class significant. We talked about them earlier. As one is pretty much like a long-range bastion fire, and the other one is more of a...
kind of the same thing, kind of the same, slightly different.
Just slightly different.
Yeah, they're not that different, really.
The weapon systems of the Imperator Titan variant provide it with deep strike and fire capabilities, allowing the Warmonger class to stand back and pound its enemies from afar. This makes a particular Emperor Titan a magnet for enemy aerospace craft. However, the Warmonger has a healthy array of anti-aircraft systems, not to mention the significant number of void shields to keep these threats at bay. This often leaves the enemy commanders unsure how to best deal with the deadly foe. So a notable Titan, a notable Imperator class Titan, is the Dominatus. Dominatus was an Imperator class Titan from an unknown Titan legion that fell in battle, fighting against the Force of Chaos during the failed defense of Lorne V. Laying broken and forgotten for millennia, the lost Titan was rediscovered by the Imperium, and so the Cadia 412th Imperial Guard Regiment, under the command of the General Stum, am I reading Stern? There we go. Again, not blinking in a while. Stern was dispatched to retrieve it with the aid of the Elder Farseer.
Yeah, does happen. Especially with Uthwe.
With the aid of the elder Farseer Taldir of the Quarpel Uthwe and her war host, who was on Lawn 5 for her own reasons, General Stern Regiment fought their way through both the Chaos Lord Krull's Blood Legion of Khorne Chaos Warband and the war boss Gorguts, Ed Unter Orcs, reaching the Fallen Titan before their enemies. Powering up the slumbering God Engine, the Imperial forces were forced to fight the ancient menace known as the Necrons. Oh my God, they're all there. Everyone is there.
This is the one battle where you can actually have people just turn up, play a big apocalypse game, and it actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So the Necrons had begin to emerge from beneath Lawn 5's surface. Despite the Farseer's betrayal, Taldir convinced General Stern to aid them against this new threat, and so they made use of the Dominatus' powerful weapons into the Necrons' advancing monoliths, thus defeating the Necron forces. But in the process, the ancient Titan's core ruptured, causing it to explode spectacularly, killing General Stern and the majority of the Cadian 412. The Eldar had managed to flee back to the Webway just before it exploded. Convenient. Those few survivors of the decimated regiment quickly spread the word off world of the treachery of the Elder Farseer. And to the present day, their regiment banner bears the black ribbon to mark their failure to recover the ancient Imperator Titan. That's it. We've learned many things.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, if you had to choose a Titan, which Titan would you be the Princept of?
Warhound. I love the faster, nimble, shock and awe, smash through a wall, kill everyone, run away again.
I'm sticking with the Warlord.
All right, it's going to have to be the Emperor class time.
Of course. When I was putting this down, I was like, Sam is going to love talking about the Emperor.
It's just the idea that it's just like, come and get me if you think you're hard enough.
Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing.
It is like it's a mobile gun platform. It's great. Yes.
Awesome. So I was thinking about what I was asking earlier about the Epic game.
Oh, right.
Seriously, if Epic came out, what would you field? Would you field a whole sort of like
I don't know if I'd play Epic.
If you were to play Epic, though.
I'd want to run like just Titans.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to run.
No, the big blocks of inventory and tanks on movement trays and stuff never really grasped me.
Okay.
Whereas like the mini Titans they brought out were still huge and individual models. Like I felt like I could have paint those with detail and I think if they bring out a game where it's epic, where you can just play Titans, I might do that.
Yeah. Okay. Sam, would you?
Titans, loads of them, hundreds of thousands of Titans, multiple. What I'd imagine, right, it would be really cool would be, you know, when you see really ornate metal chess pieces, that I would use them to make a chess game.
That would be really cool,
okay? Yeah,
like Warhound,
like inventory blocks as the pawns,
or you could use
tanks as the castles.
There's loads of ways you could do it. Like, you could have a emperor, both the warmonger and the other one as the king and queen.
Yeah.
You could have, like, normal knight titans as the pawns. There's ways you can do it. Have a full titan force. But that's... I've always wanted to do one, like, orcs versus space marines or something, or somehow like that. But who knows? One day. But I probably wouldn't play. It's just another game for me to buy and not play.
Fair enough.
True.
Right. Okay. We learned quite a bit about Titans this week, this month. Especially the Imperial ones. Next month, we are doing Xenos Titans. We are going to take a quick break now and come back with our last segment, the 40K Book Club.
The Adeptus Terra podcast is now a proud member of the NPC, the Narrative Podcast Consortium. Our aim is to inspire your hobby through the rich lore of the 41st millennium. If you enjoy our podcast, then make sure you check out these other awesome shows where you can get coverage on campaigns, Black Library, and all kinds of general topics of the 40K background.
The NGC 40K podcast also provides in-depth campaign coverage, audio dramas, and free-flowing narrative campaign creation.
The Masters of the Forge brings the world of the 40K to life on your tabletop. with discussion on the lore, backed up by narrative-themed rules and battle reports.
Of course, this is only a fraction of the topics covered by the podcast of the NPC. Please tune in to find out more.
Hello, welcome back. Well, that took me by surprise.
This is your segment.
I fully did not expect Matt to point at me once that advert ended. So yeah, welcome back. Thank you very much. So we are. This is the fourth 40K book club,
and the first kind of tweak to 40K book club.
First yep. sort of tweak. We're doing so. This time we're doing. It's going to move my mic a second. Hang on. There we go. So this this time we have chosen not to do a several hour book review on a long 5,000 page book like Rinsworld. And instead we've opted to pick for a short story. However, the short story, we'll do the book review on the short story. And then actually Matt very kindly has drawn up a mission for mm-hmm. to narratively accompany the book. So we've all played a game, like we said earlier, we've all played a game of that mission.
Yep.
And, so Matt will go through the rules. We will then talk about how our games went, what we thought was good. And that those rules will be made available to you when this episode goes out. We'll do a Google Doc and we'll share that link and you can go and use it, bastardize it and change it to something else or do whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah, indeed. It's really a framework for you to write a type of mission like this. It does accompany the story, but we'll get into more details on the mission once we've done the book review.
Awesome. So, the book that we, in case you missed it, the book that we did was the short story Heart of Rage. It is found in many, many areas of Black Library. So Space Marine Omnibus, Victories of the Space Marines, there's audiobooks, it's Book of Blood, the second BA Omnibus. There are loads of places to go and see it. So I actually picked it up in the Space Marine Omnibus. And then I actually went ahead and bought the audiobook as well. And I found that the audiobook was really good and made me really it's just like the background noises when you think of like the aliens and stuff that we're going to go into, that kind of sub low level music behind really built up the atmosphere, made it more of a book.
The ambient noises of chittering aliens that get described in the book just adds something to it. You can read something, but actually having sounds as well helps.
That's cool. So you both engaged with the audio of this one.
Yeah, I got the audio book quite a few years ago.
Yeah, it's an old short story, which is probably why it's in so many books in Black Library, to be honest.
Mm. But it was definitely, I read it first, and then I got the short story because Neil suggested it, and actually I'm really happy that I got it. So we'll jump straight in. So... there are a number of members of this kill team. So we start off by our kill team. We've got Sergeant Kale, who is this, who talks a lot differently how I thought he would talk, but in the audiobook.
Okay.
He's very short and I think the word stalwart, very like abrupt. Stalwart. A very abrupt and very hard-faced man.
Straight-laced,
very following the rules ish and we meet him, and we also meet Brother Codicir Garrus Nord, or Nord as we're going to call him because that's so much easier than his full title. Who is this who's a psyker, who's a codicer, so he's quite a mid-range psyker, but it ain't his first rodeo. And then we have a team of three. I'm not going to call them standard Marines, but I didn't even write their names down.
I found it convenient that they were in red armor. Let's say that.
They were in red armor. I've got the names. That's a lie. So you've got Brother Dane, Brother Surin, and Brother Corey. Corey had the flamer. I just want to point that one out. So this group, this motley crew of, or should we call them the B team? have been challenged or set to work by the by Omegos, whose full name is Neil.
Oh god, no, I didn't actually.
I remember his name is Zeren.
Zeren.
But I can never remember the other bit.
Everything else that goes with it. So his name is Zeren.
Yes.
He is a Omegos from the Mechanicum.
Yeah.
And he has sought the help of the B team, the Blood Angel team. To go onto a seemingly broken and disused and almost rejected hive ship from the Tyranid tendrils that are reaching out.
Yep.
Is it Leviathan? Is that?
They don't reveal the...
I don't think they actually...
No? Okay.
Colours so, don't get...
For my purpose, I'm going to call it Leviathan because that makes more sense with Blood Angels being there.
Yes.
Yeah. And being close enough by to offer assistance, but anyway, so they this Hulk, Space Hulk, has been found adrift by this Magos
hive ship.
This hive ship has been found adrift by this Magos. Prior to the Blood Angels being there, the Magos and a couple of his team were on the ship or were sent onto the ship. And basically a little trouble happened and only this one Magos made it off. So he is now sending the Blood Angels in, the B team in, to go and secure this Space Hulk. Not this this hive ship. It's got to stop calling it Space
Hulk.
Yes, needs to go and secure this hive ship. Damn it.
Yeah, make sure there's no threats and see what happened to his team.
And see what happened to his team.
It's like a secondary.
And the reason they're given for this is because... imagine how much information on how to defeat the Tyranids would be on this ship, because obviously this is where they're born, where they're fed, they're kept, their whole makeup is made from comes from this ship, and obviously this is quite a big thing for the Blood Angels for various reasons in the future. From when this
yeah,
written,
it will be, they
it will be.
That.
So having this information could be beneficial. Mm. So they get shoved into a torpedo and fired at this.
Just think of the impact.
Squelch.
Yeah.
And then drilling.
That's what I mean. The whole thing freaks me out a bit. Like when you were talking about audio and like chittering things, I could just picture footsteps of squelching, like.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it.
So I don't think I could listen to that.
So they arrive on this space Hulk.
No,
oh, damn it! They arrive on this hive ship.
I hope you don't edit any of that out, just for fun.
No.
So many times? Count how many times a message on the Facebook, and you'll get an eternal hug from me.
So they go on this hive ship. I'm going to type the word hive ship here. Hang on. Right. So they arrive on this hive ship, and really, I can split this into three key encounters.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Encounter one. The squad, the B team, meet three lictors.
Yes.
And it's a little bit of backwards and forwards, but they defeat the three lictors.
Yeah. Fairly convincingly.
It's going pretty swimmingly, considering how scary lictors are.
Yeah, and Nord like psychically pushes one into the pool, doesn't he? That was quite cool.
Mm-hmm. It's
that
going...
melts.
It's going pretty well at the moment. And it was really great how they described the lictors coming out of the wall. I know probably they weren't like molding through. But yeah, they appeared out of nowhere. They are truly inside the belly of this hive ship. So
yes, it's amazing. The hive ship.
I'm reading it here and it says hive ship.
So step two, encounter two. They split up. Now, if anything everyone has ever told me about any form of role-play game or D&D or
Dungeon Crawl
or movie or book, never split the party.
Yes.
And so this seemed like a mistake. So Nord, the two primary characters, Nord and Sergeant Kale, go off together. And Brother Dane, Brother Seren, and Brother Corey, go off together.
Red shirt one, red shirt two, red shirt three.
It's almost like this was planned. So out of nowhere, so Norden Kale are having a merry little jaunt.
Hand in hand.
It's termagants, not tervagants.
Oh, okay.
Before I have to correct you.
So Norden Kale are having a merry little jaunt, hand in hand. Nord starts to feel something isn't quite right here. He starts to feel the black rage bubbling up. And if you read most Blood Angel books, most of the time they're complaining about this bubbling black rage. So it didn't really seem too out of place. But he's got this, something is awakening. It doesn't feel like human and it doesn't feel like Tyranid.
Yes.
And he can't quite get it.
Yeah.
Flip to the other scene, the other team. We're going to call it B1. So B1... are journeying through this hive ship, only to be jumped by
some termagants.
Some termagants.
Yeah.
So they literally do burst out of the wall. They are.
Yeah.
And the way it describes it is like a sea of claws and chitin and hooves.
Flesh borers. I think it mentions that.
Yeah. And they're like being overrun. They have no chance. They are dead.
They take their toll on the enemy, but they die.
Yeah, they're going to die. This is they're gonzo. And at that point, Nord is like, has his weird no moment. I can feel my brothers dying and goes a bit black ragey, but he manages to pull it back. Mm. So it's just Nord and Kale now. So Nord then, as he's feeling all these weird attack things, is then given a bit of a beating by something which he doesn't know what it is. So he gets a bit abused at this point. And then this leads us to our third encounter. So Nord and Kale move towards the psychic being that they have no idea what it is. And assumingly seems to be the worst place to head towards if three of a squad makes
it. It really does. Yeah.
But you know, Blood Angels ho and all that lot. So they move towards this psychic being and Nord can't tell what it is. And it's not human. It's not Tyranid. Mm-hmm. Nord and Kale find... the adept they were sent to find. And this is Adept Indus. And they see him sort of just standing there in the room.
He's kind of like hovering, isn't he?
Kind of hovering, yeah, in this room. And you imagine like it is a birthing room, isn't it? So there's a couple of pools. And it's quite a nice looking spa type thing for Tyranids. and so this adept is standing there. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, almost cinematic-like, moved from the shadows into the light, is this hive tyrant. Who is...
I've mentioned it once already, but it just popped into my head, the picture of the Independence Day alien.
Yeah.
Talking through the scientist. Yeah.
So that
exactly
is
exactly like that.
That's a great example of what's about to happen. The Hive Tyrant steps out of the shadows into the light, and Indus and he, or she, or non-gender-specific Hive Tyrant...
It...
Is basically connected in what I could only describe as an Avatar style way of tail to ponytail.
Just a bit of an image.
And at this point, they have a bit of a backwards and forwards. He's talking about how great the hive mind is and how he is the hive mind. And,
yeah, how he now controls the tyranny.
Yeah, yeah, and how it's great. And in the audiobook for this, there's this one moment, there's this one fantastic line where he's like, Brother Kale, in his normal sort of deadpan way, he's like, hang on, you just said we a minute ago, now you say me. And he's like, and Inda starts screaming and all of a sudden all of these termagants, tervagons,
Hormigans. You need to learn Tyranid names.
All these Hormigans just run into the chamber and start attacking them. And there's a massive psychic attack from the Hive Tyrant, like an explosion. Kale and Nord are beaten back. And all of a sudden, all of these Hormigans retreat and create this wall between Indus and the Hive Tyrant and Nord and Kale. And they're like, see, I can control them. Indus said that he found the Hive Tyrant almost dead and psychically, and this was the weird way, psychically pushed himself into the Hive Tyrant. to learn all he could. And Indus said that he is now taking control of the hive on the ship, and he believes the hive answers to him. You know, all the things that I'm sure that nobody's ever tried before in this entire time of Tyranids attacking
humanity. I'm just wondering where the consent is.
the tech priest knew. So Indus reveals that actually the tech priest knew what Indus had did. The tech priest apparently was actually there with Indus and saw it happening. And he is jealous of Indus, so he's sending. He's kind of scared, run away.
He's like, right, take him out, and then maybe I can learn the secrets myself.
Yeah, and control the hive.
Yeah.
So they find out this is what's happened, and actually, the tech priest has done it on purpose. So he fled, sent the Blood Angels in to fight and take the hive for himself, and Nord. Is at this point invited to join Indus because he is a powerful psycho. He's a psycho. And he moves forwards and at this point uses his massive battle axe to cut the connection between the Hive Tyrant and Indus. And the Hive Tyrant creates a massive psychic blast, and Nord resists the dropping into the Black Rage from the warp energy. But Kale cannot withstand the attack from the Hive Tyrant, as he doesn't have that psychic conditioning, and he goes full Black Rage and starts to attack Nord. Nord's like blocking attacks left, right, and center, like doing the whole "No, I'm your brother" type thing.
Yeah.
Imagine Obi-Wan fighting whatever his name was. You know, the moody teenager.
Anakin.
There we go. Like, we were the chosen one. That kind of moment. And as that's happening, Nord sees a rent in the armor of Kale, and he manages to stab his knife up into Kale, stopping his twin hearts.
He punches the primary heart, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
It doesn't stop his heart because he doesn't die.
Not yet.
He's very close to death.
And it's not really the Black Rage, it's the Red Thirst he falls into.
Either of the two.
I'm only saying this because he snaps out of it, and nobody snaps out of the Black Rage.
Mephiston went full Black Rage.
Did he?
And came back from it.
That's why he has skulls on his, because he's metal.
No.
And he is made.
Yeah, he's the only known guy to come back from it.
Okay, so
it's the Red Thirst.
Not Black
Rage. They're very interchangeable.
Mm. Okay. So as he stabs Kale and stops him from attacking him, he turns to Indus and unleashes this full telepathic might through the battle axe, and he blinds the Hive Tyrant. At this point, he kind of grabs Kale and runs, and as they're running through, the Hive is starting to awaken. And at this point, I imagine like an Indiana Jones style. Like montage of running through all these different compartments with different Tyranids waking up.
Going back to pick up the psychic hood when it falls off and then carrying on going.
So Kale is actually alive, like Matt said, as they reach the boarding torpedo. And Nord puts Kale inside the boarding torpedo, grabs something suspicious out of a brown satchel.
Yeah, they never really explain that very well, do they?
Not at that point.
Do they at the end?
Okay.
He picks up a combat pack or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So he then drops Kale inside the torpedo, hits the big, well, I imagine a big red button to start closing and sending the torpedo back, and then steps out. There's a whole, no, you can't go, that's an order, that kind of stuff.
And here's one thing. Nord refers to Kale as Sir, yet he's the librarian, so he surely outranks the sergeant?
Librarians are really interesting. They can take command, but they're not part of the command structure. They're very separate. So I guess unless you've been put in charge on leaving said ship or planet, Baal, then you are subject to the veteran
Lever. Maybe it's like a yes sir type thing, or no sir, I can't do that.
Kind of thing, yeah.
So where were we? So the torpedo starts going back to the mothership. Nord goes back and single combat. This is very strange. Single combat. He starts going through the hive and killing lots of Tyranids. And he goes, at this point, like I said, he goes full either red thirst, black rage.
He's just letting go, isn't he? He's letting all of that memory and experience take hold of him because he knows he's dead and he's in front of the Hive Tyrant again and he knows he needs that extra strength and drive.
Yeah. So, and at that point, he's fighting across this bridge with his battle axe in hand, and then the bridge collapses and he falls. And he goes like full supernova, and the Hive Tyrant. So he falls and he meets the Hive Tyrant. The Hive Tyrant starts stepping backwards because I can imagine it's one of these sort of like floating in the air, hair coming out, glowy eye type moments of a librarian. And then we flip over to the ship. The Adept goes mental. When the captain turns to him, and the captain is played by a Russian in very poor Russian accent.
Oh, okay.
In the audiobook.
Gorilev.
Gorilev. So he's like, look, the torpedo is back. We've got what we needed. We're blowing up the ship. And the Adept is like, it is worth more than you. It is worth more than everyone here. It is worth more than those blood angels.
Yeah, and I'll kill everyone if I have to get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And at that point, swoosh open the doors, and Brother Sergeant Kale is standing there, still weirdly with the knife poking out.
Yeah, like right in the middle of his chest.
yeah. And he's like, "Oh no!" Like at that point, I can imagine it's quite insulting. Like Space Marines, we know, take it quite personally if you ever kind of trying to waste their life. So at that point, Kale arrives, turns to the tech priest. Reveals he knows everything and what's gone on, and he
why
knows
they
that,
were really sent in.
Yeah, he knows that it's because he wants power and et cetera, et cetera. And then Kale yanks the knife out of himself and then run towards the Adept and chops his head off.
Yep.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And at that point, Nord is dying and everything is going dark. And he grabs and lets go of a trigger, doesn't say what it is, and he lets the fusion bomb detonate that he took out of the...
I say fusion bomb.
Yeah, it's fusion. And it blows up the hive ship. And at this point, we don't know it blows up the hive ship. It blows up. And Nord is met by Sanguinius in the last moments.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It's like a, well done, brother.
Mm.
Fist bump.
It's like into the Valhalla, the... Is it Olympus? What's the Greek version of
Olympus?
Olympus. Yeah. Where all the heroes, dead heroes, go and hang out.
Yeah. So
that kind of idea.
So yeah. Nord blows up, or we assume Nord blows up, as you said. Mm-hmm. Met by Sanguinius. Kayla's killed the Adept, and thus endeth the lesson.
Mm.
So initial thoughts, favourite moment and snippet.
I love when Kale just, you know, in my head,
X-Ren.
He just slowly...
X-Ren.
Zeren.
Yeah, Zeren.
That's how you pronounce it, yeah. Just walks very, in my head, was walking very methodically while the tech adept's trying to, you know, reassure him, get out of the line of fire, you know, sneak his way out of it. And Kale just silently, like, just pulls this knife from his chest and just goes, nope. Bye.
The tech priest, when he confronts the captain, has this weird kind of, you know, like Medusa in the movie where all the snakes come out.
Yeah.
And like he's like full on like...
Just trying to scare him into doing what he wants.
Yeah.
But then a space marine walks in. You're not going to do that.
And everyone looks at the space marine and is just like...
Yeah, he's got a knife in his chest and he's still walking. Don't think I'm scared of you anymore. But yeah, that was just... awesome kind of little tidbit scene that jumped out at me when I read that little bit of like favorite moment. I was like, yeah, that bit.
There's a couple of bits I like. initially the description of the Red Thirst and the Black Rage being described as clouds of ruby and darkness, and obviously them closing in.
Yeah, like very claustrophobic kind of haze.
Yeah. But the thing I think, the bit I like most was when they found out that Indus was a psyker, or is a psyker, and he's actually trying to take control of the Hive.
Mm, yeah, that was a really cool kind of plot twist that you don't see that often, actually. You see Mechanicum agents trying to do heretical things,
yeah,
and or Inquisitors and stuff, but never actually like joined with the Hive.
Yeah,
it's... And yeah, that was interesting.
So I really liked, and I've got quite a cinematic head on my shoulders, and I really liked the bit where Kale is fully giving himself over to the Black Rage or the Red Thirst and fighting through the Hive. So I imagine this in my...
You mean Nord?
Nord, sorry, not Kale, sorry, Nord. And I imagine this in, if you could imagine it being filmed in a movie, of a tracking shot of Nord fighting himself through like a single corridor with loads of stuff flying at him, and he's just like getting faster and faster with his force axe.
Stabby, stabby, shooty,
yeah,
shooty.
And I was just like, I was like, go on, Nord, kill them.
It
was like a almost semi fanboy Blood Angel, yeah, moment, and I imagine it, if they turn this into like a short movie, that would be like super cool moment to like see a tracking shot of a space marine chopping, yeah, through loads of Tyranids.
There's a similar scene in the Ragnar Blackmane book,
mm-hmm, right?
It's literally called, I think, Blackmane or Ragnar Blackmane. And yeah, he's running through killing like Nurgle zombies. They're like charging down a corridor, and he's just,
yeah,
him and his wolf guard just cutting through them, and you're like, yeah, do it.
Yeah,
like, yeah, I can imagine. Especially as a Blood Angel player, like, yeah, being like, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you're very fond of librarians.
Like, if only this would work in real game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Perhaps it does.
Favourite character and why?
Mine's Nord. He's kind of the main character in my eyes. He's the hero of the story. Like, I quite liked... Kale was cool. You didn't really get to know the other Marines.
Nah, they're just there to bolster numbers.
And yeah, I was very tempted to put Neil's one, but when I read that Neil had already put that in, I was like, it has to be Nord.
Yeah. Okay. Neil, what was yours?
Garalev. Basically because he's only in it briefly, really sort of right at the beginning and right at the end. But
the captain, Garalev's the captain.
Garalev, yeah.
Okay, because we didn't actually really talk about Garalev, but
no, yeah. he's the captain of the Imperial vessel that has been commandeered by Zerin, and when they find out that it's a Hive ship, he's instantly displays a healthy fear of it and wants to blow it up straight away.
Yeah, and he's, you know, very
fear the alien.
He's a veteran.
Yeah, he's a veteran guy. He's fought Tyranids before.
And other Xenos races. Yeah. So he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So much so that he also understands and respects Space Marines to the point where he is confident enough to go up to a Space Marine.
Touch them on the arm.
Touch them on the pauldron.
Yeah.
And sort of confide in them that he has reservations about what's going on.
Yeah, not many captains do that.
No,
but obviously the Nord and Kel know that he respects them enough to not take him out where he stands.
Mm. Indeed.
So mine would have been Nord, obviously main character. But I think after listening to the audio drama, Kale and his classic one-liners was just too strong. Where it's just like, you don't know the meaning of pain type liner. And then at the point where he's trying to stop Nord, he's like, just come on, we can blow it up from over there. Which, in truth, they could have just done.
Nord could have been like, let's go back to the ship and bombard the hell out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crippled, it's fine.
Let's virus bomb it, it's fine.
I would imagine the whole idea behind Nord's reasoning is because this is a psychic threat that we haven't faced before, and I need to guarantee that it is dead.
Mm. Yeah,
so I need to see it with my own eyes that has happened. And that's the only reason I can see why Nord even bothers going back in.
Yeah.
That and the glory of...
I'll be remembered this way.
Yeah.
It's, maybe.
My axe. Right, so Matt is going to take us through the mission that he wrote. And then if you read through all of it, and then we'll give our impressions of how it ran.
Yeah,
at the
I've
end.
Got a little bit where you guys can share your opinions of the game and playing it, whether it worked, and a few tweaks we made along the way as well. So the goal was to write a mission to accompany the short story. I very soon realized, as someone who's not very kind of experienced in writing detailed narrative missions, that recreating the exact happenings of a book is something that is near impossible without very careful game mastering and also putting loads of extra rules in, like making the kind of movie marine and coming up with a way where these space marines aren't going to instantly die in front of hordes of Tyranids. And as I thought about it, I thought actually recreating the story exactly as it was would be kind of boring because we've already experienced that.
Yeah.
So I ended up building what I think is a fairly simple mission using 8th edition rules based around the narrative of the story we heard and just shared with you guys. And to write in a way where you could play it multiple times, get a variety of outcomes, and even tweak it to different races. You know, I think actually in the end you could tweak it fairly easily to be an orc force or a Necron force that the Space Marines are going up against. So basically I've written a gauntlet game for the Space Marines. They need to eliminate the key target, in this sense a Hive Tyrant, and they're playing against Tyranids. So the mission itself is a Zone Mortalis power level 11 game. Here the power level is a bit fluid.
Yeah.
So again, this is something that could easily be tweaked if you want to play the same mission but higher points and have more squads and more characters in there. Zone Mortalis as well, it obviously isn't in 8th edition rule set yet. So we are playing through a very simplified 8th edition-ish rule set of Zone Mortalis that myself and our buddy Tim came up with.
Yep.
Which plays quite easily and quite fun, eliminates some of the differences that Zone Mortalis had, just because of the way the 8th edition really simplified rules.
Yeah.
But came up with hopefully a few cool, fun things, which we might hear from you guys later on, that played the mission. I added an extra rule, if you're obviously aware of Zone Mortalis, you can have doors that are locked or doors that can be controlled or doors that just are open. So when you walk towards them, they just open. I added the rule that all the doors had to be open, so it didn't restrict any movement, just to represent the way that the Space Marines walked through the hive, and there was lots of kind of doorways almost, or kind of, I guess, vents, or I don't know what to call them on a hive ship, but they were opening and closing. And
sphincters.
Yeah, orifices.
Yes.
Those kind of things. So yeah, just to represent that, you have just open doors. No one's controlling them.
Yeah.
Anyway, to the armies. So we have Space Marines. This is five-man tactical squad and a librarian or character if you're playing a different one. So Sam played the Blood Angels and played it as close to the kind of book story as we could.
Yep.
Whereas Neil brought a captain and five tat squad in Crimson Fists.
Yes.
A slightly different story. And that was really interesting. That comes to power level 11, which is why it's a power level 11 game to match that squad. Obviously, there's only four Space Marine characters and a librarian, but the fifth one could be you added to the story, or just another red shirt who is going to die. Your choice.
Yep.
A special rule for the mission for the Space Marines was that each model gains +1 attack and a unique special rule called Resilient to the Cause after their first death. This is when their wounds are reduced to 0.
Hang on. Was it a +1 attack before?
No.
Okay. So they get +1 attack.
And resilient to the cause.
Okay.
So resilient to the cause is every time a model loses a wound, on the roll of a 5+, the wound is ignored and has no effect. So it's a 5+, feel no pain, for ease of communicating that. The idea of this is the sooner the model is reduced to 0 wounds, so for the TAT squad, instantly, they only have one wound, then you lay the model down, stand it back up again instantly, and it then is back with its starting wound set, with plus one attack to its characteristic and a 5-up feel no pain. Once this model dies with these rules in place, they are removed from play and gone from the game.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's almost giving them two lives.
Two lives, yep.
The idea for this, narratively, was the idea that the Marines are resilient to the cause. They're trying to achieve their mission no matter what. They've been knocked back. They've maybe got a rent in their armor. That represents them getting reduced to the zero runes. Mm-hmm. And then they're pushing it even harder. It's like the cornered tiger is going to fight more than the one that's wandering about. It's that whole idea. So they've got plus one attacks. They're getting more ferocious. But they've also got this 5-up feel no pain of just, I'm going to keep fighting even though my wounds hurt. Which is a very Space Marine thing to do.
Yeah.
It also, I mean, in terms of practical sense, it just stops the game ending so soon. Mm. I don't think it would work without this rule. I think it's very key to this mission.
Yeah, because ultimately, like 30 Hormigans is very difficult against 5 guys.
Yes. Yeah. It was very interesting playing it because as I wrote to the mission, I felt like these Marines are never going to make it. But it seemed to play more levels than I thought. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So that's the Space Marines. 5 guys, a character, a librarian if you want to stick as close to the mission as possible with Blood Angels. Mm-hmm. The other thing to say is resilient to the cause, to be honest, represents the Red Thirst, Black Rage as well. The plus one attack and the feel no pain is pretty much the rules that Death Company have over tactical squads.
Yeah.
So I pretty much took that, but made it more universal for all Space Marine chapters.
Yeah.
So the Tyranids, in this case, they have 3 forces, each with different power level costs. Did you put that in?
Yeah, next to it. Have you updated yours?
No.
Okay.
So this is obviously a narrative mission. We tried to fit it around the story as much as possible. The idea of not prescribing a list for you guys is so that you can play with the models you have.
Yep.
Obviously, it's a narrative game. Don't be a div. That's the simple rule that we always go by for any mission that we're, and any game we're playing. Try and stick to the idea of what's happening and, you know, more gaunts and smaller creatures rather than, I'm going to bring a Carnifex because that'll be really hard for them to kill. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, use your head. So the first force is 6 points, which is basically the points for 3 lictors, like they encounter in the story. The second force is 9 points, which, again, we did 30 termagants, didn't we?
Yeah.
To represent the red shirts dying in that encounter. And then we have the last force, which is 11 power level to match the Space Marines. So it's been escalating this whole time. Must include a Hive Tyrant, because that is your target, your mission. And the Hive Tyrant starts with only 3 wounds remaining to represent that this is a crippled hive ship and to represent that injured Hive Tyrant towards the end. And because of this, they cost -1 power. That also means you can have a Hive Tyrant with 10 Hormigants to represent exactly what happens in the mission, if you would like. The special rule for this mission for the Tyranids is that the first 2 forces must be suffering from instinctive behavior unless they are a synapse creature themselves. So synapse doesn't work the same way. It doesn't have the bubble effect. Mm. If you have synapse creatures, you decide to bring warriors because that's all you've got. Fine, they don't suffer instinctive behavior, but all the termagants would, or whatever else.
Yeah.
So instinctive behavior for those who don't have Tyranids normally is they are 1 less to hit.
Yep. One minus for their hits
and
-2 to their charge range,
right?
Which comes into effect how you deploy the Tyranids. The way the mission works is that each force counts as an encounter. The goal is for the Space Marines to survive all the encounters. And Tyranids can spring the trap at any point, but cannot unleash another force until the one prior to it has been destroyed. So first, you have to place your 6 power level encounter force out. Once that is defeated, however many Space Marines are left, you have a breather turn so they can move, regroup, whatever, and then you can deploy your second force, which is the 9 points for us termagants, and so on. Each force slash encounter, whatever you want to call them, for the Tyranids is deployed following the deep strike rules in the 40k rulebook. So they have to be 9 inches away and appear on the table, unless they have a rule where they can assault straight out of Deep Strike. They can't assault, which is most things. And obviously they're suffering from instinctive behavior. So potentially minus two. So you're going to basically need an 11 or a 12 to get into combat. This meant that the Space Marines had time to attack the Tyranids before they were literally swarmed.
Yeah.
And I think that rule was very crucial in making this game balanced as well.
Mm-hmm.
Conditions for victory were that the Space Marines win if they can slay the Hive Tyrant, and as long as one model is still alive of the Space Marines. And the Tyranids win if all the Marines are removed from play before the Hive Tyrant is slain. The one thing I want to highlight that I just forgot is with the Space Marines, as we have played it twice, the character, the librarian or the captain or whatever, when they are reduced to zero wounds, they gain the plus one attack, they get the five up, feel no pain, variant, resilient to the cause, and they return on full wounds.
Yeah.
Okay, this is still a highlight to me of whether that is too powerful or not. It seemed fairly balanced in the way our games worked, but I'm not 100% on that rule right yet. And that's the mission. So three encounters, you fight one after another. The Marines kind of have two lives worth of things, so they don't die instantly. And they're fighting their way through to kill the Hive Tyrant. And the Tyranids just want to wipe out the Blood Angels. And that's the mission. Do you guys want to chat a little bit about playing it, how it felt, if you enjoyed it or not?
Yeah, sure. So I played Chris earlier on today. And he played Tyranids and I played Blood Angels. I at first was terrified that I was, as Blood Angels, was just going to get eaten by Lictors.
Mm, it felt that way very quickly.
Exactly.
As soon as the Lictors kind of popped out, I was like, oh no, this game is just really unbalanced.
Yeah. So it was good. Every encounter, every one of the three felt hard, felt challenging. It wasn't just a standard, I'm going to get walked over or I'm walking over them. I think for our game, morale played a big play, played a big part in the game. So where I killed like three or four, Chris fell morale, and then the rest of the 15 were removed.
Yeah, that was the second wave, wasn't it? Encounter.
But it was good. I think there's certain things you can do, which is you can be a bit gamey. So we had one jokey point where I was stood in one corner, Chris revealed his the Hive Tyrant and the 10 Ghiblis with him in the other corner, and I was like, well, I'm just gonna stay here, then you can come to me. And then Chris was like, well, I'm gonna stay here, you can come to me. So you kind of have to be careful not to be a bit of a div.
Yeah, I kind of went, look, Sam, you're the one wandering through the ship trying to find this thing. Yeah.
And I went to look at the gestation pools for a bit when you took a picture with them.
Look at the views.
Yeah. So it was really, I really enjoyed it. It was challenging throughout, and I won. So who's not going to like a game that I win?
You finished with how many Marines left?
I lost the Librarian, and I lost one Standard Marine. So I would have had four left.
Yeah.
So the Librarian died, and Kale survived.
Yeah, so unlike you, where you protected your character till the end,
Sam
was like, my librarian goes in first. And to be fair, was murdering fools all over the place. But then
he was
wounded,
running around on his own.
Wounded like, before they got to the Hive Tyrant.
He took a 15-man squad of
on his own.
Like, it was fine. He was annoying. It was because I used my Mephisto model, so it obviously was going to be really good.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So yeah, in terms of balance,
I think it was balanced. The original rules was it was 11 power points, power levels each encounter. But the way that I pointed the Tyranids up, and actually the way I think worked pretty well, was the 6, 9, 11.
So we had three Lictors, which is literally 6 power level. 30 Termagants is two squads of 15, which is max for Zone Mortalis. You can only have units up to 15. And that was the 9 power level, wasn't it? And then the 11 for the Hive Tyrant and the 10 Hormigants.
Because in theory, for the first round, you could have three Lictors, 15 Termagants, a squad of
11
gargoyles.
Three times, you were just never going to make it.
Nah, it would have been hard. But the escalation part worked pretty well. No, it was good. I enjoyed it. And we played it on the Necromunda tiles.
Yes.
So that was a really good setting for the board. It would have worked just as well if it was like a busy terrain board, terrain.
You could easily do that. If you didn't want to play Zone Mortalis or haven't got the rule set, obviously I'm more than welcome to ask for them and I'll send them to through the podcast because they are very, very simple and Tim's done a great job editing them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tweak them further, etc. I'm sure we'll get 8th edition Zone Mortalis rules fairly soon from Games Workshop. Oh, yeah, should do. But yeah, it seemed to work quite well. I was quite happy with the first. I watched and kind of GM'd and made sure rules were being tweaked right. And we were, you know, almost play testing it.
Yeah.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. What about your because obviously you two played together. So what about your game?
I got to play the Tyranids, which was fun. Reminds me how much I love my Tyranids. So I'm just so glad you're doing an army of them because it just means I can kind of be like, I can still see them. It's fine. but yeah, I quite enjoyed playing the Horde. I felt like I wanted to win, but at the same time, I wanted you to kind of get to the final stage.
Yeah. I mean,
I was playing very tactically and it didn't change my way of gaming.
No.
But I was always pleased when, all the Lictors are dead. Oh, cool. Now I get to bring my Termagants on.
Yeah.
Like, it felt cool to be able to bring the next wave on and see if you could weather it.
Yeah. I think the way I had it was obviously a 5-man tactical squad and a captain. Captain was armed with a power fist.
Yeah, that made a massive difference in our game. Like, because Sam was using a force axe.
Yeah.
So, you know, plus one strength, but just doing damage one, I think they do.
They do D3 damage.
D3 damage. Okay, same as the power fist.
Yeah.
So it was just the highest strength.
I was hitting on four
attacks as well.
Because he had four attacks and then five with the two. But at the same time, you lose out on psychic powers.
Yes, which Sam was using to good effect as well, especially against the Lictors.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it played out really well. It was nice to have that sort of like ramping up of, right, okay, so you've got these to deal with, and once they're dealt with, you've now got this wave, which is more. So a real kind of wave defense kind of game.
Yeah.
Whilst trying to work out strategically where you're going to place yourself to be most effective and survive for longer.
Yeah, I think adding the breather turns in. So very quickly, I think just as the Lictors were finishing being killed, it was on Sam's go.
Yeah.
And then Chris was like, oh, well, I'll just send my Termagants like straight onto the board. And I was like, well, he should have a turn to regroup. And that made a massive difference because it meant you could set up for the next encounter.
Yeah.
So it plays very differently to a 40K game in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that, just to point out, if you're going to give this mission a go, and we will have a nice, easy-to-read, typed-up version for you if you want it, is that you don't have to start an encounter straight away. So you can give the Space Marines 2-3 turns to wander around the spaceship, well, the Hive ship, damn it. and then pick your moment. You know, be like, right, they're in an open room. Now I'm putting my guys down. And that was quite a cool mechanic, not having to go straight away.
I think I liked sort of almost like the when we got to the second encounter where I'd moved everything into basically the middle of the board and had them cinematically covering the corridors.
Yeah, that was really cool, that image.
It just felt right.
Mm.
Even though it possibly wasn't the most tactically sound idea, it just felt all right.
And I think being able to put the two kind of 15-man Termagant squads far enough away, and you know, so I was attacking from multiple angles at once, that felt very cool. Like, you are surrounded, you are in a Tyranid ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was cool. And I think I did the same with my Lictors, actually. Didn't work very well for them, but they kind of spread out and kind of, so you had to go towards one.
But then
I just spread them out a bit too far, I think.
Yeah.
But tactical error. To have a game that is impacted by tactical error rather than rules makes me very proud of this mission, because I feel like actually, in some luck, it honestly feels like luck, the game kind of worked out. So all the special rules like suffering instinctive behavior made a massive difference. Mm-hmm. Having the second life with the plus one attack and the feel no pain meant that the Marines were likely to get to the end. But like in our game, all the tactical squad were dead, weren't they? It was just your captain that made it.
Yeah.
Which was cool. Felt right in some way. Obviously, shame for you, but felt great for me.
Cortez's mighty power fist.
He did punch so many people that it was insane. Aliens, I should say.
It's fine, he punched from the safety of being surrounded by men.
But the reason I say...
He worked with his team.
He did hide a little bit.
I don't need a team.
I think... And the reason I say luck is that Sam obviously independently pointed up those three waves that ended up being 6, 9, and 11. Originally, it was supposed to be 11, 11, 11. And I think that just would not have worked.
No.
So that tweak, which happened naturally from the first game just because of the picks that Sam chose based on the book.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying really I'm a fantastic list builder, but...
It really made a difference. So, having that ramp up of points meant that the Space Marines could make it to the end.
Yeah.
And in both games, they made it to the end. And they'd suffered losses before they got there. But they, and it was touch and go. I think the couple of things I'm thinking about is whether the Hive Tyrant should start on slightly more wounds than three.
Yeah.
I chose three because that's the bottom level of the table. Mm-hmm. So once you've got three wounds left, your movement's down, your hits are lower. Because you are that injured. Even just putting him to five would have made him much faster and hitting on threes rather than fours. And that could have swayed it a bit too much. Yeah. So it's really hard to judge that. Also, judging whether the character should respawn on full health or just one wound. So for both games, we played with the full body points.
Yep.
The librarian ended up dying.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, okay, the captain didn't. He went down and came back up. But that maybe that's a sign that actually it is fairly well balanced and it's about right. I don't know.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was good. Yeah. I think it's definitely, being our first one, I think it was definitely a one for people at home to give a go.
Yeah.
We were talking about earlier about transferring it over to different races, so you can do a Crimson Fist versus Orcs.
Yeah, I can easily see an Orc one. There's actually a short story of Crimson Fist going into a cave complex and killing a bunch of Orcs.
We'd need some Elder for that.
Yes, well, if you were playing it exactly, but this isn't exactly as the book does.
No.
They don't find the Hive Tyrant, run off, and then just the Librarian comes back. We based it roughly off the story.
Yeah.
I see it in the sense that you could have some Orc commandos to represent the stealthy, like the Lictors. You have some Orc boys and maybe some Gretchen as the Horde in the second wave.
Mm-hmm.
Then your third wave is a few more Orc boys and a war boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's assassinate the war boss, and that's why you're going in to find him.
Yeah,
it'll play exactly the same.
It's definitely transferable across the races, Dark Elder, Tau. Like it's all there. Like I think. It'd be good to see and to hear or read listeners' experiences with the mission. Give it a go and see how it works out.
I'd love that. Like, there's super no pressure to do that.
No.
It was actually really fun to play, and I'd actually quite like to play it 1, 2, 3 more times.
Yeah.
I'd like to play it with Space Wolves and see if Space Wolves have a different impact.
I think you're gonna type it up into a Google Doc.
I'm gonna type it up into almost how I'm not gonna promise masterclass. Bit of mission, but I'm going to try and make it look as much like a rulebook mission as I can.
Yeah, cool.
So it's easy to read, easy to understand.
Yep, and that should be available by the time we put the episode out. So I should include the link in the show notes.
Excellent.
So at this point, I think it's a great time to say that our next book is going to be the Xenos by Dan Abnett.
Yep.
The start of the Eisenhorn series. Like I said earlier, I've started reading it, really enjoying it. I know Neil's a big fan. Matt hasn't read it.
I've never read it, so I'm really looking forward to a new book.
So that will be in 2 months' time. So you've got 2 months to go ahead and buy that and give it a read or don't and listen to us instead. That's the book club.
I hope you enjoyed the short story and the mission. Suggest more short stories that you think we can cover and write our own missions for. Mm-hmm. We're going to try it again after Xenos. So we do a book and then a short story. So let us know, because we've got a couple of months and then another couple of months to plan a short story and a mission.
Yeah.
Cool. So
on that bombshell, it's time to end the show. No, I'm joking. We're going to go and have a quick break and come back with our hobby commitments.
It's a sobering statistic that more returning armed forces personnel have committed suicide than were killed during the Afghanistan conflict. Currently, the UK Armed Forces is reporting a 78% rise in mental health problems. Models for Heroes is a non-profit charitable organisation that supports the treatment of mental health across the UK by promoting model building, painting and gaming hobbies. Making and creating small models requires intense focus that can complement the treatment of PTSD, anxiety and depression, not to mention the mental health benefits of the social aspect of the group. Many of us in the hobby have paint, kits and far too many miniatures piled up that we bought on a whim. So why not consider donating yours? Models for Heroes have sent over 500 donated kits to support centres right across the UK and overseas. And your support will ensure that we can provide kits and materials to many more vital treatment sessions. Visit modelsforheroes.co.uk for more details and follow us on social media.
Welcome back. This is our hobby commitments and goodbyes for the episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed starting our new mini-series of Titans. Sharing my first kind of ever written narrative mission was quite a proud moment for me. I'm glad you guys enjoyed playing it. I'm looking forward to doing some new ones of those in the future.
Cool, cool.
Anyway, I'm just reading mine and laughing because there's just no way. But I am going to commit to fully painting my recon squad, my Contemptor Dreadnought, and my Primarch by next episode.
You're brave.
You've got a long time.
Very, very brave.
This is the
brave.
Week after Salute. This will be. So, towards the end of April. Yeah, five weeks rather than four because we were recording slightly early.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's probably unlikely. I'm going to be quite proud if I hit two of those out of three. And have started work on the third one. But I said to myself, I wanted this force done by Salute. You know, for the reason that, not massively because it's connected to Salute, but that month. Because then after Salute, hopefully I've bought some stuff to move into a 40K project. And I can just focus on gaming my Heresy, getting ready for the September event.
Yeah.
You know, so that gives me a few months where at least if only I'm gaming at Bunkers, it's still three or four games. Mm-hmm. Before I'm going to go play four or five over a weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just really push myself and try and achieve it. If I don't, I won't lose sleep over it, I don't think. I think I've pushed so far to the edge that I'm not going to cry if I don't hit it. But I'm going to push myself to do it. And that's me.
Cool.
Awesome.
I'm going to paint my Thanatar.
Cool. Fully painted Thanatar. Includes basing.
I'm going to try and touch on some more Tyranids.
Nice. Cool. Again, undisclosed. Just
undisclosed.
Keep going.
I'm just going to keep going with the batch painting and just hopefully push them through.
Yeah, cool.
Cool. And I am going to be very non-committal in...
unlike you, Neil.
Unlike me, yes, indeed. My hobby commitment, I will do some Salamander stuff, but I'm not going to commit to saying I'm going to do this.
Yeah, like because 10 or 20 or 5 Pyroclasts or whatever.
Yeah, I just want to achieve something rather than being definitely got to get this done.
Yeah.
I feel that will work better for me over the course of the next month.
Okay, cool. Just obviously anything you do Salamanders will count as your previous hobby commitment.
Yes.
So you're going to have to think about bonus.
Yeah.
I suppose do some terrain stuff.
Could do.
The stuff you love.
Yes.
Cool. Well, this has been a fun episode. Episode 43, Megazord activated. Until next time, I've been Matt.
I've been Sam.
And I've been Neil.
And this has been the Adeptus Terra podcast. And I did it right.
I know.
I'm so tired.
Let's go.